It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech on the eve of the Mobile World Congress. We've got a fantastic panel. We'll talk about new phones, Google's privacy concerns, Microsoft and their Google Lighting video, and a whole lot more. TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 342, recorded Sunday, February 26th, 2012. Microsoft can't kern. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for EcoBoost in the 2012 Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology. And by GoToMeeting. Get better connected to the people you depend on for success. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Let me press the start button. Did you know that I have a start button for this show?
Yeah.
Yeah. John C. Dvorak is here. Before. From channeldvorak.com. Good to have you in studio once again. Ten Hut. Also with us, Gina Smith. This, I feel like it's old home week.
It is old.
When John left Dvorak on computers, I called Gina and she came in and took your place. Gina Smith
scared to death.
Has a new domain called...
She was scared to death.
She was at the time.
Was she shaking?
Were you
now
shaking?
Now I'm scared. A new domain.net is where you have gone with all of your...
Minions.
Minions, including Mr. Dvorak.
I'm helping her.
Are you a minion?
Yeah, apparently.
I got a great story I'm going to tell you about one of your minions in just a second.
I have minions. Everyone has minions.
Also joining us, Dan Patterson, formerly of ABC Radio News. He is now doing something super cool. He's reinventing journalism as we speak. He's in his new studio.
It's kind of
how many mics does he have?
Well, he does a show there.
Oh,
it's a studio.
Many shows,
unless those are props.
Yeah, get him.
Dan is covering the campaign, but you're kind of on your own.
No, I'm not on my own. I mean, I started a podcasting company, Leo. It's called CoPoint, and it's,
no, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to do that. Please disconnect him immediately. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, I don't have venture capital because I don't need it or want it. But I mean, this is a real deal company.
You know why? Because podcasting is cheap.
Well, it's cheap, and I mean, having a business model, how novel.
But Dan, you've done some really, you've always done some interesting. When you left ABC News, you were covering the Occupy movement kind of on your own. You were using Storify to tell the story of the Occupy movement, and then you got credentialed and were covering the campaign. You're not in the campaign trail anymore?
You know, I go back and forth, but yeah, this is the second presidential campaign I've covered. I mean, back in 08, 07, and 08, I used, you know, Twitter very early on. I was in Darfur for a while in 08 and used Twitter and social media to cover the war there. And this year, it's really interesting to see the adoption. You know, back in 08, we all had to evangelize these social tools, and now, you know, they're pretty mainstream. You know,
now you have to tell Rupert, Rupert, stop tweeting.
Yeah, right. No kidding.
Tweeting,
cut it out.
Well, great. Yes, press credentials for all. And now, now you can be on the web and be credentialed and meet Robot
Mitt. Isn't that great? Robot Mitt. Also here, the man who crowned me president of the internet, and that's going to guarantee you a regular seat on the panel, Mr. Jason Heiner. Of TechRepublic.com.
I just wanted to say that I love the stuff Dan's been doing. I've been following Dan on Twitter for a couple years, and we've podcasted before a couple times. So,
isn't it cool? It's really cool. Yeah, it's wonderful to see how media is changing dramatically. So here we have, you know, the perfect example of the old school.
You know, when I first got a machine,
and the new school,
it had a hand crank.
So I had lunch with Tom Anderson. Actually, wait a minute. I have to tell this story Paul Harvey would tell it. You know, so now you know the rest of the story. But you can't. I have to tell it backwards. I should do it backwards. Hello, American. Stand by for news.
There you go.
Paul Harvey. So he, I'm sitting and having lunch. He said, you know, I used to work with you before I founded MySpace.
Paul Harvey?
No, Tom Anderson. I said, really? He said, yeah, I was an intern at ZDTV. He wrote for Internet Tonight with Michaela and Harriet. But then he said, but even before that, I wrote chapters. What am I hearing? What are you doing?
Are you insane?
John, you're here. You don't have to watch the show. You can actually.
I wanted to get to the chat room. Sorry. I muted you. Sorry.
But before then, he wrote a chapter. He wrote chapters of Dvorak's Guide to Telecommunications. He said, John won't remember me.
I remember him to the minute.
Do you, Tom Anderson?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. So we both wrote for you in the good old days.
Right.
Isn't that great? And then we worked for Tech TV. And now you're...
I'm a minion.
A minion.
And I'm working with Jason Heiner.
Are you working with Jason as well? Kind of,
right, Jason? Would you say
absolutely.
Yeah.
So Jason works for CBS via Tech Republic. CBS Interactive owns Tech Republic.
Consumerization of IT.
You're writing about the what?
I'm writing about consumerization of IT.
Holy camoly.
Why is this thing turning off the...
People bring in their iPads
it turns
into
off
work.
The...
Yep. Which is a beat now, apparently. Right, Jason?
Absolutely. It's a really important one. A lot of money, you know, at stake with, you know, enterprise now not controlling the stack as much, right? So Gina's doing
Look,
some
I
great
didn't
work,
do
right,
anything.
Of course.
I'm killing it, Jason.
But these guys are talking over here. Just so you know.
Can I get you in the chat room, John?
I'll get in the chat room.
Okay. It's a computer, John. It's a whole new concept. This actually is really nice. This is Dell's MacBook Air
clone.
Everybody who's doing these ultra mobile PCs is doing it. This is a Dell XPS. That's nice. It's kind of like it's aluminum. It's lightweight. It's very thin.
It's got
probably
a big
really
screen.
Real tough.
What happens Dell when you drop it?
I don't know. Should we try it?
Drop it.
Yeah, let's try it.
Burn
let's
it. Freeze it.
No, I won't do that. Because he'll take mine.
It's got a nice little grippy thing. So you try pushing it.
I like it. No, it's good. It doesn't slide.
Where's the little grippy thing?
It's on the bottom. It's called rubber feet.
It's got more
grip. No, but I don't have a Mac. I don't have the Mac. I have something separate. You know, I have a cover that ungrips it.
Oh. That's why it's red.
That's why it's red, baby. So there is lots to talk about, including right now a breaking story which has pretty much broken from the Sunday Times of London. And it's so funny because Reed Wright Webb and others have reported on it, saying that it's behind a paywall, and they apparently didn't want to pay the £2 to read the article. So they're all saying we don't know what they said, but Fox says they said this.
This is so bad.
That was my thought also. I thought, well, what? Just pay £2 and find out. And I tried, and you saw me do it. I tried to pay £2, and it's a mess.
Crapped out.
I paid it.
So
they got my money.
So what you're telling me is that Murdoch makes a big stink about this paywall thing. You spend the $2 and you can't even get
on. Piece of crap. Well, not only that, apparently the story itself is a piece of crap. So here, let me read you what's going on. Fox News summarized the article that says Facebook, using its Facebook app, was reading text messages on your phone and admitted to it, according to Fox News. Furthermore, YouTube can remotely access and operate your smartphone's camera. Flickr, Badoo, and Yahoo Messenger have accessed users' private information. I mean, if this were true, especially the Facebook allegation, it would be a bombshell, a huge story. And that's why I was trying to get to the bottom of it. My suspicion when I first read this is, I want to read more. I wasn't sure that this was exactly.
By the way, talking about accessing other things.
Here, get that microphone in your face
This is the first thing I always do to one of these machines.
Oh, look at that. John's taped over the camera.
I always tape over the camera.
So you're worried about getting spied upon? Anybody wants to spy on John, use my camera. Yeah. It's not taped over. John, see that? That's a camera. That's a camera. That's a camera. That's a camera. Oh, but you're in the bathroom when you use that.
Go on, Leo. It's just you're trying to do, you're going to do some. You're doing material.
So let me talk. Let me talk a little bit about this. Facebook has responded. Ian McKenzie responding on Facebook. Yep. Says another day, another piece of disingenuous reporting that does nothing for journalism and confuses users. And apparently, he says, we worked with the Sunday Times to explain why the Facebook Android app requests SMS read and write permissions. Here's what we sent them. Facebook is currently running a limited test of mobile features which integrate with SMS functionality. SMS read-write is not currently implemented for most users of the mobile app, but as part of this test, we declared the presence of that functionality within the App Store permissions. That's part of Android. If you've ever used an Android phone, you'll get a list of things. The phone says this app is wants to do all these things.
Right. And what does everyone always do?
Say, yeah, whatever.
Right.
I don't even read them.
I mean, this really is a rehash of the, right, we've had this conversation a million times and a long time ago. It's just the default permissions that we all kind of click yeah to say that they are reading it is really, this harkens back to the story you did last week about, you know, the declining state of tech, quote unquote, journalism, you know.
I think it's worse than that. I don't think that this is accidentally bad journalism. I think this is maliciously bad journalism.
You think it's maliciously bad? I mean, I just think this is lazy reporting, but what makes you think that this is?
I think it goes part and parcel with the same sensationalist reporting that sister publication, the Wall Street Journal, has been doing about privacy. I think that this is good copy. It sells papers. It generates links. And I think that they look at a blind eye to the fact that they may or may not be doing this. They write it in such a way that it can't be said that's wrong, but it's very sensationalistic. It's saying they're asking for permission. They must be doing it, essentially. And all I think that sells papers. But I think that it is also scary to people.
And I think it doesn't.
I don't know anybody's scared by it.
Like there's a smoking gun.
Yeah, I agree with her.
Here, right?
Yeah.
No, in fact, as Ian, now I don't know who Ian McKenzie is, but he's writing on behalf of Facebook.
PR guy, maybe.
He's saying that as far as he can tell, nobody at the Times looked any farther than what permissions these apps asked for. Now that's admittedly an issue, and part of it is actually the fault of Android. That it happens on the iPhone too. In order to do some things that you want to do, you have to ask for broader permissions than you really want. In this case, Facebook said the features aren't used outside testing. We're testing it with a small number of people who we tell exactly what we're doing, and what we're doing is, testing things like carrier billing. That's why we need to read and write SMS messages. He says the paper wrote, companies are using smartphone apps to extract vast quantities of private information about users' lives, in some cases reading their text messages and intercepting calls. I find it hard to believe that any company would want to intercept anybody's calls. What would you do with that?
Depends.
How would you hire enough people to listen to those to make it worth anything?
You could target people. Yeah, I think that's the real concern.
And that's what the real business is.
Yeah.
I got a guy that's one of my customers, and he's on the phone all the time, and I can listen to his call, and he happens to be a stockbroker who has some great clients. I'd love to listen to these calls.
But I don't think that a big corporation like Google, Facebook, Apple, this isn't part of their business model.
How do you know it's not the part of
stock tips?
In the executive suite, I'd do it. Have you ever worked for a company where you have not found a guy that's in IT that says, yeah, I got the payroll for everybody in the company?
That does happen. That does happen.
It always happens. Yeah. And you know if they're doing that, they're doing other stuff.
And that was the complaint about Dropbox, that you weren't allowed to use your own encryption keys. Dropbox knew what your encryption key was.
Yeah.
That the concern was somebody in the back room would take advantage of
this. And they do. They're bored.
Among those that
boring job.
Again, reading from the London Sunday Times. Among those that admitted reading text messages this weekend was the internet giant Facebook, which said it was accessing the information as part of a trial to launch its own messaging service, which has already been launched months ago. But companies ranging from Facebook and Apple to small operations run by individuals gain access to the treasury of data when people agree to the terms and conditions of downloading an app.
This is the business. Facebook went public, somebody wrote a ridiculous article on one of these blogs out there that said in the Facebook documents that went forth, it didn't ever say what business Facebook was in. And Facebook said they were in the advertising
business. And they're spying on us.
No, they're in the data aggregation business.
Well, that so is what they're do? In.
I mean, it's a hugely profitable business.
Go ahead, Jason.
Selling stock is...
Yeah, the bigger question is that, you know, on all these apps, like you said, both Android and iPhone, we've agreed to a lot of these permissions and we've given carte blanche to a lot of companies to do stuff that a lot of us would frankly be uncomfortable once we find out it happens. So I mean, it's related. This is related to the path thing, and to a certain degree, it's related to some of these other apps that are sort of overstepping their bounds in some of the things that they're doing. In some cases, they're overstepping the permissions, and in other cases, you know, the permissions are there, and companies can do a lot of things. And I think we're going to see more things come out where some smart companies are either going to do this sort of on the sly, and or they're going to do stuff maliciously that. You know, they could eventually monetize, pull a bunch of data from people that they could eventually monetize in lots of different ways.
Part of the problem is we don't have a good solution. Right now, there's two ways to do this. One, the Apple way, which is a company just writes an app. Apple presumably vets it, decides whether what it's doing is okay or not, doesn't tell the user because Apple doesn't have that set of permissions, and just says you're approved or disapproved. The other way is the Android system, where there isn't much oversight, but a software does have to say, this is what I want to do, and that list is given to the user. Clearly, we have problems with both solutions. Path was the iPhone issue. This is now the Facebook Sunday Times issue is an Android issue. What if, now let me just pose this way. I don't think any of these companies really want anything about you personally, John C.
If I was a stockbroker with some great clients, they would.
What if I were a company creating an internet app, a really cool internet app that I didn't want to charge for? I wanted to have it be ad supported. And in order to make this a viable business proposition, I would need to know what my users were doing so that I could give them appropriate ads. I would need a way to track this. And I would need a way, and I would want, because I'm a responsible business person, some way to notify the user that I'm doing it without overwhelming them, without getting too technical, to make, you know, for instance, when you buy a grocery store card at a Safeway store, you know what you're getting. You're giving them personal information in return for lower prices, right?
I refuse to use such cards.
Yeah,
I
know. Me too. Because
okay, but that's because you know what you're doing.
And they're going to look
and
at
some
John
insurance
Dvorak.
Company's going to get a hold of that information that, and
bingo.
Boom,
you can make that intelligent choice.
You're eating too much cheese. You're drinking too much beer. We're not going to.
Everybody does this, right, Dan? And so the question is, how am I as a company supposed to create a valid business plan that I don't get attacked by everybody for spying on them?
Maybe you shouldn't be spying on them.
Well, I can't. Then I can't give you the free service.
Well, I think we as consumers need to change our expectations. Instead of expecting that companies are going to treat us with any kind of like, I mean, companies, Leo, the path that you just described is the, you know, the best intentions are still going to lead us to hell.
Exactly.
And even though want to, I have the best intentions at heart, it doesn't matter. We as consumers need to change our expectations and not assume that a company's motive is not to make me happy. They have a profit motive, particularly a public company. And we just need to assume that if we engage in this space, our data will be sold out at one point or another and take personal precautions and either not use this stuff or not assume that our data is being protected.
I think a lot of internet users are acting like somebody walks into Safeway saying, I want those lower prices, but I don't want the card.
Right.
By the way, you get the lower prices without the card. That's the irony.
How do you do that?
You just say, I don't have my card. I don't have a card.
I don't have it with me. I forgot my number.
Or this person behind me, can we use their card? And they swipe their card and they get credited.
That's what you do because the insurance companies tracking what you're
never
buying.
Had a problem.
Oh, now let's not be tinfoil hat. Insurance companies are not tracking your grocery store card.
They want to.
They want to.
Have you ever been I gave a speech with the progressive people once in Cleveland. Holy crap, you go back in the back room with these data guys. Progressive never was, at the time I went there, they weren't an insurance company. They were nothing but a data collection company that did all kinds of schedules so they could say that this guy has to be charged this much and this guy has to be charged that much because this guy's more dangerous, he's got a certain age.
So here's the choice then. Here's the choice. You don't get these free apps. You don't get the grocery store cards. You don't use them or you don't get the free deals. Or you get the government involved, and then we regulate the hell out of it.
Or you educate yourself.
No, I don't think the government needs to be involved.
How does education help?
Okay, let me give you an example. On March 1st, Google will unveil its unified privacy policy. You know about this, right? So there is a way, if you're smart and you look around, that you can go online and through log into every Google account you have, your Gmail, your YouTube, your Google Docs, everything. Follow two or three steps. They're clearly outlined on the Electronic Frontier Foundation site, Leo, and you can clear all that stuff before March 1st.
As long as Google doesn't save it somehow.
Google saves it for 18 months.
They claim on the Google dashboard, and the EFF has pointed this out, that you can opt out. And I think that that's why I think Google's doing this right. Not everybody's doing that, by the way. But I think that's pretty good of Google to offer that as a capability.
You can only do it until March 1st.
So are you going to do that on everything that you use, every app that you use from now on?
You're defending this in such a way that you're working on something.
No, I'm not. I don't want to know.
Maybe you're aggregating data.
I think that there's a couple of things. There's this knee-jerk reaction that people say, oh, but you're getting my stuff. Nobody wants your stuff. Maybe the insurance companies. Nobody really wants your stuff.
Advertisers want your stuff.
Advertisers want your stuff in aggregate.
I think that's
where in aggregate. They don't care about an ad to Leo Laporte. They want to get all of the mid-50s guys in Northern California or whatever.
Right.
They don't care about me. So how is that a privacy infraction? Secondly, what people are arguing is going to end up with either European Union style government regulation of this, or you're going to lose all the free stuff that you get. Bye-bye to the free services.
What free stuff are we going to lose?
Facebook and Google are free. Do you use either?
Facebook does. Google, yes, I do. But Google makes its money from advertising. It doesn't. And this whole thing is a bunch of bull crap, by the way, that they're aggregating all this information. All I know is I go and I look for one product, and for the next 3 weeks, I keep getting ads
A product that What's wrong with that?
Shows me that it doesn't work. It's a scam.
Well, who are they scamming? They're scamming the advertisers.
Of course.
Well, who cares? Let them scam the advertisers.
Fine, but they don't need to be bugging me about it. I don't want to be part of their scam. There it is.
Then don't use Google.
I don't want to be part of it either.
I use Scroogle half the time anyway.
Scroogle.
They closed that.
All
they did. When did Scroogle get closed?
Google disconnected them.
Yeah.
It all gets back to the Target story, right? A couple weeks ago.
Target knows you're pregnant, Jason.
Target knows that I'm in second trimester, mm-hmm. right? Not just pregnant.
Congratulations.
So. Thank you.
You feel great in that second trimester, by the way.
Best part of the whole thing.
All the endorphins kick in.
They do.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So
I don't know why you're defending these guys.
We're not. I'm not defending them. I'm saying that it's increasingly part of this tacit agreement that we've made with the services that we're increasingly coming to use. All of us are. But you do have the option. I mean, you can be smart about it the ways that Gina and John are talking about, and you can, you know, take the tiger by the tail, but you're going to be swimming upstream more and more, right? Because everything we do is being tracked, is being aggregated. You know, big data, which is happening right now, is enabling. We sort of have the computing power and the tools to take and find in aggregate what you are interested in. The interesting thing about that target thing is, one of the things that came out was that they could, that I thought was so interesting, they were targeting people, sending them specific flyers. So not, they were in even their print media, they were printing, if they found out you were pregnant, for example, they sent you a specific flyer for pregnant people, mailer in the mail. So, you know, if it's cost effective enough to do that, you know, just your target mailer that you got essentially was customized now if you were in the sort of pregnancy category, then, you know, we're only a couple steps away from the sort of targeted advertising that we've all know is coming for, a decade. So, but we're having to make these compromises, and the problem is we're tacitly making them, right? And it's going to be harder and harder to swim upstream and get away from it.
So my question, my question is, what is the solution? So I want each of you to tell me how we fix this problem, starting with you, Justin.
I don't use Facebook.
No.
I complain a lot.
I'm not saying. I'm saying in general, I would like to continue to have these free solutions on the internet, and I understand people's desire for privacy. You have no solution except I'm going to complain a lot and not use Facebook. Is that your solution?
Are you ridiculing me
yes.
for this?
So that's the best you could do?
No, I could think about it. I could write a column about it.
Dan Patterson, what do we do? What's the solution?
All right, so let me present. I'm not saying that this is necessarily my view, but let me play the devil's advocate here and say.
There's somebody behind you sneaking up on you, a guy from Google. Really, turn around.
Looks like he's playing games.
He's terrifying. let me present the government argument, right? And that is only, I'm not saying this is the best solution. However, the government is more accountable to us as citizens than a private company is. And some type of legislation or regulation saying that you need to present this information and needs to be worded clearly to people, at least that legislation will, in theory, come from individuals or from legislators. I don't think that that is an ideal solution, but I think that the government is more accountable to us than a company is. Having said that, I like John's solution. I'm going to move to South Dakota, get a dog and a gun.
All right. So Dan says, let the government fix it. Jason, you have a suggestion?
Yeah. So, I think I don't really like the government sort of getting into stuff. I think they always screw it up.
By the way. I'll talk about Lamar Smith's H.R. 1981.
It's true, but I agree with Dan. I think that we're naive to think that this isn't going to happen, right? Because citizens, more and more, as they sort of realize this stuff is happening, there's going to be an outcry for it, and this is going to happen. They're going to get involved. I think that the personal sort of private solution that all of us need to consider is that, you know, we need to look at this the way that a lot of essentially those of us who are, you know, in the media, look at this. Like, you control the message a little bit, right? You control the things that you, the places where you have these, your cards. You control your public stuff that you have out there, and then you have some stuff that you do try to keep private, and you look at it at the places, you know, where you can. Facebook, right? You understand the fact that you can, that all, you know, Facebook wants to make your stuff public, and that there's some stuff you just want to be for only your friend, you know? So some of it is kind of education, but it's just, I think people are becoming more and more sophisticated about their understanding of this sort of social world that we live in. The people that have been doing social media longer and longer, right? They start to figure it out naturally. Obviously, the first round, people are up there filing their drunken photos all the time. After a while, people sort of start to get it. I think we're going to see more informed consumers, and I think that's the way that we have to deal with it individually, is we sort of have the public persona that they can find and they can see, and then we control sort of the private thing, the private stuff that we don't want to put out there.
I do think,
personal responsibility.
Yeah, I do think that, I mean, the personal solutions that Gina described, the EFF solution, and what John describes, getting off Facebook, A, nobody's going to do it, but B, it puts a lot of the onus on the consumer. Is that really where the onus belongs?
That's where it is. Because
so what's your solution?
That's because of guys like you, Leo.
It's my fault. I take full responsibility.
And it's not just Leo. It's a whole generation of people that don't care about privacy anymore.
Why should I care what Target knows about me?
Right. A lot of people don't care. Right. And a lot of people don't know. There was a recent survey that came out that showed that 80% of Facebook users had no idea this data was being collected. So there's a lot of ignorance out
That's
there.
That's pretty ignorant.
So for
I have to say, that is amazing. 80%.
And try to delete your Facebook account. It's very, very
I know.
Difficult.
I have done it. I have
you
done
gotta
it.
You got to get a groovy post to find out how to do it.
We live in this age of, like, no personal responsibility, right? Nobody wants to take responsibility. They want to blame all their problems or all the things on the corporation, blame it on the government, right? I'm just saying that at some point we're going to have to say people are still responsible for themselves. Governments have responsibilities. Corporations do have responsibilities. But citizens also have responsibilities.
Is what Facebook did, I mean, Google's done with their dashboard and the ability to delete item by item your personal information, is that sufficient? Or do
Google,
we need...
What, the Google thing?
Yeah.
I think that's a great first step, right? I applaud them for doing that. It does give people, it does make it clearer and give you the chance to go in there and do it yourself. And it's, you know, pretty self-explanatory. It's a little complicated, but all in all, I think that's the kind of thing that I hope we see more of.
I'd frankly prefer that to a government law.
Well, that's because the government lobby some big, thick document with all kinds of weird crap thrown in there. And the next thing you know, you can't walk across
Facebook's
the street without getting a ticket.
Terms of service isn't. I mean, that's the thing. Like, yes, legislation is convoluted. I'm not saying government is a perfect solution, but it at least it is more transparent and.
Uh-oh.
Oh, the government cut him off.
And
that's it for you.
Oh, Derek, government.
And yeah, the EFF, because I was looking around there on this other story we were going to talk about, and they said, you know, our advice in 2006 still holds. There are six things you can do to protect your privacy. And I thought, really? I thought your privacy was gone. And I went to their site, and this is a lot of work. They say don't put personally identifying information in your search terms ever. That means don't self-Google. Right,
this is from 2006.
It's from 2006.
That's what's so funny about
this. But the EFF published yesterday that all six of these things still apply. Don't use your ISP.
Wait a minute, though. I have to say, let's start with the first one.
All right.
Don't put personally identifying information in your search terms.
It says
it makes sense not to put your name, address, and credit card number, but if you search for Parkinson's disease and Facebook keeps track of it.
And then you search Leo Laporte, and then the insurance companies will jack up your rate.
So it's pretty hard not to. In fact, we learned that when...
All these things are hard.
We learned that when a supposedly anonymized search information from Ask.com was given to, I can't remember who, and a reporter in Florida was able to track down a person from that data.
Yes.
Because if you aggregate your search terms together, they don't need much to find. So
that's the
first
thing.
It says easy, not so easy.
Not so easy, and it gets harder as their list goes down. They say don't use your ISP's search engine.
I don't even know what that means. What's an ISP search?
Comcast has a search engine.
This is from 2006.
No, they still do.
Don't use your provider search engine
anymore. They still have them.
Because Google's so much better. Go ahead. Keep going.
Don't log into your
Give all your information to Google.
Right. Don't log into your search engine or related.
Now, that's relevant. Don't log into your Google Plus or Google account. Yep.
Right. So you're not using Google. And then there's a really interesting one that was number four.
By the way, that means that you can't use Gmail. You can't use GChat.
I don't use Gmail.
You can't use a lot of free services, right?
I don't use
You can't use Hotmail, MSN.
I don't use Hotmail.
You also can go and tell them not to record your history. That's what I do. Sometimes I want to be logged into Google, but I don't want them, you know, recording my search history, right? So you can, through the tools that you mentioned, Leo, you can go in there. That's the first tip I would give everybody right here is, like, if you are logged into Google or Bing, go there and tell it not to to take your search history, to log your search history, and, you know, try to give you all of its information based on search history. So that's a great place to start.
And you got to do it before March 1st. When it comes,
what happens after March 1st?
March 1st, the unified thing goes into effect. And what was so funny is Yahoo announced
the same day. I think it'll be easier after March 1st.
It should be. But Google, or rather Yahoo, announced the same day that they are only going to keep your stuff for 3 months, as opposed to the 18 months that Google.
Yeah, it's a real question why Google needs to keep it for so long. To be honest,
for the government, they're aggregating your data
for the government.
You can go to the Google Transparency Project.
I mean, it doesn't help advertising.
No, it's for the government.
Yes. And for the police.
3 months. 3 months would be plenty for advertising.
The government's got you nailed. They got the Google data for the last 18 months, and then they have everyone using terabyte hard disks, which means you never do any hard disk maintenance. So everything you've ever done is on your hard disk for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Now, the other
step four is block cookies from your search engine. That's what iOS did automatically, and Google end-arounded.
Yes,
right?
Google end-arounded.
Supposedly.
No, I think they actually did.
Yeah, I think it's still a scam.
Okay. There's more to this than
they say. Vary your IP address, and I thought, okay,
can't do that
now
that
it's
easy.
Too much. Now it's too much.
Well, no, it doesn't even matter if you do, because if you change it, the internet service provider knows exactly
know
what
exactly
IP
when
address
you change
is.
This
is
what the
and they
is
recommend
silly.
The EFF recommends to use web proxies.
What about the Tor network?
Stuff.
Go into something that slows down everything.
You know, the truth is, though, if you ask me, if you're worried about government, I mean, I don't know about if you're worried about Google, but if you're worried about government. Using Tor is basically saying, over here, follow me. I'm doing something private. OCIA, ONSA.
Now this kind of contradicts what you were saying a little while ago, which nobody cares. Now you're saying they're...
No, I'm saying, I said, if you're worried about the government, using Tor is a bad idea. If you're worried about Google, maybe okay. Because I don't think
Google's in league with the government. If you look,
oh,
at the
Google's
Google.
In league with the government.
Absolutely.
Well, then we're screwed.
Of course we are. Hooray!
Let me adjust that statement a little bit before Google sues me.
I do know the CIA has a stake in Facebook, so there you go.
Of course they do.
They are investors.
They'd be crazy
in Facebook,
not to.
Yeah. The CIA has a venture arm. I mean, I don't know what it means that they invested
you,
it.
You can go to the Google Transparency Report and see exactly what law enforcement agencies to have asked meetings. Them to give them, and almost always Google provides.
Oh yeah, everybody does. Not just Google.
Yeah, but you can,
you'd have to be crazy. What are you?
Oh, it's a great.
You're doing business in the U.S. and you say no. I'm not giving you that
subpoena?
Information.
Push your mic closer again, complaining.
Good luck.
Sorry, guys. But
right. I just want to clarify one thing I said earlier. It's the web history. That's what Google calls
web history,
in there.
Right.
In the web history. Go into your settings. Clear. You can. There's a thing that says remove all web history for yourself, and then you can also pause it so that it no longer keeps tracking your web history.
Yeah. Here's some great news.
Removing it pauses it.
Here's some great news. The White House has announced a new privacy bill of rights and an agreement not to track. It's over. We solved it.
Yeah, that'll do it.
No tracking is the ultimate answer.
American consumers cannot wait any longer for better privacy rules, so President Obama took the wraps off his administration's framework for new privacy regulations. The White House announced the first product of that framework, the completion of an industry agreement on do not track technology for behavior-based web advertising. It's over. Thank you. Congratulations.
Well,
peace is breaking
out. Yes, we're happy.
Well done.
If
bravo.
If they could just talk Google into using
that. They only
stuff.
Did it.
No, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and AOL agree.
Yeah, they won't do anything.
They're going to put do not track into their browsers.
You got to remember that Google's ultimate responsibility is to its investors.
But no, but they agreed. The government is, you know what?
Unless you're a terrorist.
Here's the long term. Here's the long
term.
Here's the reason Google does go along with this, because the last thing they want is a DOJ or an FTC investigation.
Well, they have one. They just got out of one.
Right. So they're going to go along with anything that the government suggests. And to allow consumers to opt in to do not track is, of course, very good business for all of the above.
Yeah, but then
mostly because most consumers go, huh?
Right. He said, well, that's it. If you've got 80% or 78% of Facebook users saying they're not even aware their data is being
used. Isn't this the solution we were asking for? According to the Consumer Privacy Bill of Rights, consumers have the right to exercise control over what personal data organizations collect and how they use it, right?
Right.
Consumers have the right to easily understandable information about privacy and security practices, right? We all agree.
Yeah, but this is a document. This isn't law.
No, just promises, and empty promises.
These are guidelines.
But they agreed. Google,
you know,
Yahoo.
I mean, they had guidelines in your parking lot over there, and I parked completely illegally because I have no.
You're such a scofflaw.
Now, probably a cop is going to write me a ticket.
It's Sunday. They don't have cops in Petaluma on Sunday.
That's what I thought. They have no cops in Petaluma on Sunday. That was my theory.
No, they're all drunk.
But they're all drunk.
They're not drunk.
No. I mean, that's what I was told.
The significance of this, though, is that, look, it's the executive branch of the government. I mean, they're not necessarily jumping on top trying to create new laws, but they are saying we're going to take the laws, privacy laws that are in place, and we're going to try to, you know, put pressure on these companies to, you know, act in good faith toward their users. I mean, I think that part of it I like.
And do not track is in Firefox, it's in Chrome, it's in Safari. Yep. You can set a switch on those browsers, very simple for consumers. And these companies have agreed. I don't see Facebook on this list, but Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and AOL have agreed to adhere to this. And I think that that's exactly what we're looking for. It's not a new law. Yep. FTC will enforce this. These companies have agreed. This is the solution.
And I think this is a solution to this topic. I think we should move ahead.
All right, we're going
to
move on. Yeah, but I just think that's, well, that's the relevant news story.
We'll
see. We
could
all just TrueCrypt all of our stuff.
Oh, that's just asking for trouble.
Why is it asking for trouble?
TrueCrypt is great because you TrueCrypt it once, and only you have the password.
We're going to talk about that.
You die with that.
There are conflicting opinions. The 10th and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals have conflicting opinions on that matter, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit.
Right after this.
Gina Smith is here from anewdomain.com. And what is GroovyPost? Is that related?
Well, there are a partner site, and it's not anewdomain.com. It's anewdomain.net.
Sorry, thank you.
And anewdomain.net is the site that John and I are doing together with a bunch of people who bailed from Byte, who are freelancers, who I think are in the chat
room.
Jerry
Pournelle.
Jerry's with you,
Jerry
too.
Jerry Pournelle is
Dr.
with
Pournelle.
Us.
And, awesome.
And a number of security experts who I actually believe are spies, so I won't call them out in the chat room. But
you know, RSA is in San Francisco next week. How many of you
blacked
are
out resumes.
We have a pretty good group of people. A number of you are here for RSA.
And how many of you work for the CIA?
They can't raise their hands.
I was kidding.
But like
you can always tell
like
them by
Skull
the black
and Bones,
glasses.
They're supposed to get up and leave, I believe. aren't they? I think they're supposed to.
I don't think
if you say CIA, they're supposed to just without a word, just get up and leave.
You know, I had Eric, my little boy.
I never heard that one.
I was with Eric over the summer.
They usually start itching.
We were in front of the White House, and suddenly there were cops on horses who were going, "Get away, get away!" And they were pushing us back off.
You particularly?
Me and every other tourist in front of the White House in the summer.
Oh, you were in the White House.
No. We were like in front of the lawn, and suddenly, out of nowhere, these guys, literally the cavalry on horses, start pushing us all back. I'm going, what's going on? Well, the guy that I'm with is Todd Moore. He's one of the guys at newdomain.net. He wrote Tap, Move, Shake, which is a great book, by the way, that Wozniak wrote the foreword to. At any rate, I asked some guy who had the black glasses on and looked so CIA.
Was he talking to his sleeve? Because that's how you know.
He just looked like Central Casting. This guy looks like CIA. I said to him, what's going on? And he said, in 5 minutes. He goes, in 4.5 minutes, a helicopter is going to land on the White House lawn and pick up the Obamas. I'm like, really? And he goes, look at your watch. And in 4.5 minutes, a helicopter. I mean, it was great. I've got pictures on it.
Aren't you glad? It would be terrible if it was like 7 minutes or 8 minutes.
But I mean, yeah. I don't know how we got on this topic.
Eventually.
The CIA guys
at some point. I want it
to
run well.
Brain implant.
I'm glad that they're easy to trigger.
I have a funny story. I got kicked out of the White House last spring when I was there for a press conference, but I won't.
Wow.
Were you? They throw you out?
Yeah.
Why did they throw you out?
Sort of.
Were you talking in your sleeve?
No, they were. They are really serious about. I mean, the security is crazy. I was going in to for a press conference on the IT, the smart grid. You know, they're sort of bringing. And so it was really interesting stuff. But I went there. It's the one on Pennsylvania Avenue. The check
that
the
White House.
Point.
That White House. Yeah.
That White House.
That was the one over in.
See, I was thrown out of the Girl Scouts. He was thrown out of the White House. I'm
sorry,
completely.
Go ahead,
so there's
go ahead.
Two. There's a security checkpoint there. Well, and I thought that I was, I was ready to go in. I was just like, hey, I'm here, you know, I'm ready to go in. And so they're like, just wait there, we'll buzz you. I'm like, okay, great. So I'm standing there, and so I thought she buzzed me in, and so the gate opens, and I just walk up to the lady behind the glass, you know. And all of a sudden, like, I mean, out of nowhere, I never even saw, like, two guys come and they've got me by my elbows and they're like pulling me back. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Well, they hadn't buzzed me, and it was a guy that was behind me. I see the guy sort of go behind. He had scanned his badge and opened it and was going in. And so I just kind of walked in with him, not realizing it. I thought they were buzzing me in. Man, they took me out to the thing. They were serious.
Did they take you out and beat you?
Yeah, what they do?
Took me out and put me back, you know, in front of the gate and said, you got to wait here until we buzz you. And I was like, I didn't even, like I said, those guys came out of nowhere. I mean, I didn't even know there were two guys standing around.
Secret Service.
They are no joke, about security on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, and I should have been clear. I said CIA Secret Service is what we meant.
It's funny because in the old days, you could just walk into the White House. Andrew Jackson is very famous for welcoming people to walk in the White House. In fact, at one point, he had a 1,400-pound wheel of cheese in the – I'm not kidding.
And then he'd have a duel
in the
with
portico,
you.
Yeah. And people would come in. They could have a little cheese. They could talk to the president. They could look around and they could leave. And there was no Secret Service. That was
when he
it.
Got inaugurated, he had the equivalent of coolers on the front lawn just inviting everybody to come and
that's the way it should be.
They had snipers on the roof.
People don't believe me. This is the picture of Andrew Jackson and the giant wheel of cheese. And there they are. There are people in the White House eating from a huge wheel of cheese.
There they are.
In less than 2 hours,
boy,
1,400
I've seen
pounds.
This show go off the track. This is the cake taker.
What do you mean go off the track? This is
that's right there, man.
This is totally
it's
off
a
the track.
Cheese.
It's
talk
it's,
about government cheese.
It's off the track and been spun out and upside down. Government cheese.
Andrew Jackson was definitely for consumer rights on the internet, I think.
Andrew Jackson. Don't challenge him to a duel.
I'm just telling you, go to picturehistory.com. You can get a high-res image.
Of the cheese?
Of Andrew Jackson's cheese.
I love that site.
Huh.
I never heard of it.
Now, Henry's my husband's so into reading presidential biographies.
Oh, that's cool. This was 1837.
In this, fantastic. Yeah. Now, what did you got here, Leo?
A commercial.
Oh, no. A commercial.
I did a Ford. We had Steve Martin, the comedian, on Wednesday. And we, during a triangulation show, which you haven't heard it, go listen to it. Don't look at it because Steve's like completely pixelated. But listen. And I started a Ford commercial. He went, whoa. I thought we were like Wayne's World. Oh, you have an advertiser? Wow.
Wayne's World.
You got to send people a memo before you do these interviews.
Whoa. Ford. Wow.
Wow.
This show brought to you by the Ford Motor Company, who's really reconsidering their advertising strategy right about now. They are the creators of the fine.
Unless they like cheese.
They might like cheese. The fine eco. Go look for some cheese in the commissary. I bet you there's some.
You have to make comment every time. I slip out stealthily.
I know, but I have to call attention. I know. Wide shot of John leaving. Go ahead. Don't leave. Have some cheese.
Have some cheese. I'll check my email and tweet.
Check your email. You may smoke them if you got them. This episode brought to you by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine. So here's the issue. Did he just do bunny ears?
He did. Hey, and you know what that means in Europe? That means, in the UK?
What?
That means up yours. If you go to a new domain.net,
you can see. It has to be this way, not this way.
Right, if you do it the opposite way, it means up yours.
Victor.
And all of us doing this in our pictures, in Europe, they're going, what? Why are they all flipping us off, all these Americans? Hey, did you have an ad that you were doing right now?
Today's show, I guess it's my fault. I was the one who brought up the cheese.
You did.
Today's show is brought to you by Ford. Did I mention that they are the creators of the EcoBoost engine? You can find out more at Ford.com/technology. Amazing technology they're putting into these cars. A 21st century car company. The EcoBoost engine, the idea is you get the power of a V8 with the economy of a V6. That's the 3.5-liter EcoBoost in the SHO. Now they've got 2-liter EcoBoosts. Those are 4-cylinder engines that give you great pickup, great fuel economy. You feel like you're driving a big car. Well, you are, because it's in the 2012 Explorer or the 2012 Edge, but you're getting small car economy. In fact, an EPA estimated 28 highway miles per gallon on the 2.0 EcoBoost four-wheel drive. That's the best in class for large utility vehicles. How do they do it? Well, two technologies. Direct injection, of course. That produces a cooler down. I'm going to read this copy because I have no idea.
So technical. I was like, you know this much about cars?
Wow. Nothing. I know nothing. I do drive a Ford Mustang, but it's got a V8. It does not have this. I wish it did, actually. It's got a direct injection produces a cooler, denser charge. It generates more power per drop of fuel.
Really?
Yes.
So it's...
And then, now, sometimes I've been told that, the old turbocharged engines, big turbine, takes a little while to spin up because a lot of, momentum in there. And that gave you something we call turbo lag. But this is, they're doing two smaller turbines. Let me play that video again because they show it in here. Two smaller turbines that spin up right away. So there's no lag, but you get a huge amount of torque. So what a turbine does is it takes power from the engine's exhaust to spin those turbine wheels, then compresses the air in the cylinder. And that pressurized air, again, significant increase in performance per liter. Or gallon, if you're here in the U.S. So the 2.0-liter EcoBoost engine now available on the 2012 Explorer and Edge, and next year, the 2013 Escape. Actually, it's not next year. It's in the spring. The 2013 Escape will offer 1.6-liter and 2.0-liter EcoBoost engines. Again, great performance and great gas mileage. It's kind of a holy grail. Actually, if John were here, he's the guy who told me.
About?
That one of the goals in engine design, this kind of holy grail, is to get 1 horse per cubic centimeter.
Really?
Right?
I never knew that.
Yeah, that's like, in fact, when he comes back, I'll ask him. He told me this. This 1.6-liter engine, which is what, 1,600 cc's? Or I don't know. I'll have to ask him, do the math. But anyway, it's more than 1 horsepower per cubic centimeter. It's amazing. 365 horsepower in the 3.5-liter V6.
Wow.
420 foot-pounds of torque. It's incredible. So take a look at it right now. You just go to Ford.com/technology.
I'm trading in my BMW.
Right now. You should. You know what? You really should. You would love this. And you'd love the Ford Sync.
And Scott Monty and his social
all the technology. Yeah.
Ford have really.
Scott's
made.
Great.
Isn't he nice?
He's really a nice guy, and he makes Ford seem hip. Which
it is hip.
And it has become so.
I'll tell you, if you hang out with Alan Mulally, you will see how hip it is. He wears the sweater vest. He looks just like Pat Boone. Ford.com/technology.
Pat Boone. That's great.
The first time I met Alan, I wore a suit. I thought, I'm meeting the CEO of a Fortune 500, a Fortune 10, whatever company. I'm going to wear a suit. He's wearing a crew, like a Pat. He looks like Pat Boone. He's got a V-neck sweater.
Maybe he's thinking, the first time I'm going to meet Leah Laporte,
it was,
I'm going to look cool.
The next time I wore a V-neck sweater and he wore a suit.
Really?
Swear to God.
Of course.
Very confusing.
You can never be too dressed up.
What is that? What? Don't let him in. Oh, God, we're in trouble. John is at the controls now of the show.
Is he?
Look at him.
Oh, no.
Okay, John, press F on the keyboard. Press F. Press F.
What does that do?
Go ahead. See? Look at that.
Oh, cool.
Flew it right out of there.
You let John drive this thing?
He's never driven it before. I'm very nervous. He's figured out how to do that. He's got some weird transition.
That's
oh, look.
Funny.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of cool transitions here.
Oh, dear.
And by the way, I'm on. Hey, how are you guys doing?
Yeah. Good to see you, John. You can stay there. But correct me. Didn't you not tell me once that the holy grail of engine design was 1 horsepower per cubic centimeter?
That would be one of them, yeah. Used to be one per cubic inch. Remember in the olden days when you'd have
now
to put
CCs.
A cam in the car and all of these crazy things. But, so I ran into these things out here, which is these kind of – there's a Mad magazine.
There's an autographed Mad.
And right under it was this.
You really smell like dog buns.
What is the name of your show?
What's going on?
We're brainstorming new names for shows, and we thought YRSLDB –
Should be it. For sure.
You really smell...
like dog puns.
What is that? What is the story of that, by the way? Does anybody know? John, do you know? Chad? Nobody knows.
I'm afraid to ask what a dog bun is, but I guess I can imagine.
Dogs don't
have
buns,
do they? It's like a cow patty. It's like a cow patty.
Dogs don't... Let's move on. Actually, this is a story Gina wrote about in a newdomain.net.
Yes.
Pleading the fifth. Now, this is what's interesting on this is... There were two decisions from federal court this week, the 10th and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. The 10th was a ruling on a Chicago story, a Chicago.
It's Colorado.
Colorado, that's right. Very good.
The
Colorado.
One's name is Ramona something.
They let stand a judge's ruling in that case that the defendant in a mortgage fraud case could be compelled to produce the contents of her encrypted laptop.
Well, I mean, they can't make her talk.
Well, they could say, you go to jail until you give us the password,
they
basically.
They put you in jail for contempt of court, which is what they overturned in the 11th Circuit.
That's so weird. The next day, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals overturned a Florida contempt of court charge. This one was for a child pornography suspect. He refused to decrypt the contents of several hard drives.
Yeah, five laptops. He wouldn't give him his TrueCrypt password.
The 11th Circuit
and it was
said...
TrueCrypt.
He has the right under the Fifth Amendment not to incriminate himself. So the really interesting question is, if you have an encrypted drive, is giving the police the key is it self-incriminating? And one court ruling says yes, the other said no.
Well, this will go all the way to the Supreme Court. You can bet.
Well,
and I think
maybe.
Interesting thing here, and Jason, I'm glad you're here because I was going to pitch this as a story for you for tomorrow, is there's a whole cool enterprise angle on this is, so say I'm a user in a big company and I decide to use TrueCrypt, and if you've ever used TrueCrypt, you know, I mean, nobody can get into this hard drive unless they've got that password, and I encrypt everything, and let's say I break the law, you fire me and I leave and you take my laptop, IT now... not only has no control over what's on your iPad and on Google Docs, they can't get into any of your email or any of the stuff that supposedly belongs to them on company property.
Mm.
And that, what are the
I wonder if that's different
here?
Than the right to not to self-incriminate.
I mean, if they say you don't have to give up your password, that that the Fifth Amendment covers
But
You're
that's
right,
different. That's a civil, in the IT case, it'd be a civil issue,
right.
Not a legal issue.
Right. That's different.
I think
in terms of criminal activity, I actually think that giving your fingerprints is self-incrimination.
And courts have ruled that it is not, of course. That it is,
right, but
fact,
it is. You're
DNA,
incriminating yourself, same thing.
DNA, fingerprints.
All self-incrimination.
All completely legal. Some would say, not the courts, that is self-incrimination.
That's why I don't think this will
stand. I would say it. I'm totally on that side of
you
that.
You understand that you're not in the mainstream.
I've heard that, yeah, a couple times.
Yeah, me too.
Does anybody want to talk about, first of all, the difference between the 10th Circuit Court and the 11th Circuit? How can that happen? One court ruled one way, the other way. Dan, do you have a thought on that?
That happens fairly frequently. And the way that this will, this could go to the Supreme Court and that would settle it. I mean, this is going to be a pretty contentious year for the Supreme Court. I don't think they're going to take this. But it depends entirely upon how each decision is written, and in your particular situation, how your court and using the second person, if you are if you will rely on this as precedent, it will depend on which one is written and which the discretion of the judge to look at which they want to use as precedent and say, well, this one was written better. This one refers to law in a way that seems to, you know, depending on the district or the circuit that you're in.
In San Francisco, where we have the hippie Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they've just ruled that when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, you are allowed.
You're doing material again.
But that's, I mean, Leo, that's be that here is all more accurate. I mean, that sounds like a joke, but that, I mean, it really comes down to, well, you know, this piece fits with this piece, and this piece refers to this piece of legislation, right, and precedent. And I mean, it really is going to be.
Timothy Lee, who writes the Law and Disorder column for Ars Technica, says the issue is, in fact, there is a slight difference in the two cases. So the cases may be reconcilable. And it has to do with two, when he says, while two rulings reach opposite results, they don't necessarily contradict each other. The results turned on how much the government knew about the contents of the drive ahead of time. In previous cases, the courts have held that when the government already knows of the existence of specific incriminating files, they know that that drive contains something that could put you in jail. In that case alone, compelling a suspect to produce them does not violate the Fifth Amendment. Yeah. However, if the government merely suspects it, if it's a fishing expedition.
Right.
This is one of witch the hunt. Government crazy.
If it's a witch hunt, loophole. Then the owner of the hard drive is entitled to invoke the Fifth. In other words, if there's no other reason to think that to get you in trouble than the revealing of this, then they can't do it. Does that apply, I wonder, to DNA and fingerprints? The same kind of.
Yeah.
Standard? Like, I can't just take your fingerprints and see if you did something.
Well, that's why if you watch the of course, you don't know how much this actually is real or not, but they always try to get you to hold a cup or something in the.
Right. Then you're.
They get you to brush your teeth.
Brush
your teeth while you're here. He cites a 2006 case. A border guard in Vermont examines the contents of a traveler's laptop and found by file name that several of the files appeared to be child porn. But when the laptop was closed, the portion of the hard drive containing these files was automatically encrypted. Actually, maybe it wasn't the file name. Maybe he actually saw the pictures. They were encrypted after the drive was closed.
Well, with TrueCrypt, it did.
Right. Yeah, so if the guy was logged in and he could see the image, the border guard saw the image, said, whoa, and he closes it.
So why is the guy going across a border looking at child porn? Is this guy, how weird is this character?
You know, travel can be very lonely.
I don't know what state he's going
to. The government sought to compel the suspect to decrypt the files again. The court in this 2006 case ruled that because a government agent had already seen the files, it was okay to say, you've got to give us the key.
Well, this is just like the search and seizure stuff, you know, about the RICO Act, right, which was created to get
law.
Mobsters, right?
I know.
And so, but now they use the RICO Act against everybody.
That's kind of to your point,
against
John,
drug dealers.
These laws get passed with all sorts of.
Right, then they become.
Yeah, but with RICO, they
stuff.
Say, okay, well, you know, you have the right for the government not to bash your door down and search your house unless you're a mobster. But now they apply RICO to everything. Unless you're a drug dealer.
They can apply RICO to Facebook.
Unless we think you might.
I cite for you the case of Matt Speccarelli. Matt Speccarelli is a hero for the modern age. Do you know who Matt Speccarelli is?
No, but I love
Remember this name? He is, by the way, watching this show right now. He called me on Saturday. He sent me an email a couple of months ago, said, I am pissed. I have an iPhone, and I have an unlimited plan. I'm grandfathered in on my unlimited plan. Mm-hmm. I got a message from AT&T saying, you've used more than the top 5% of our users, we're going to throttle you.
What does he do?
And I don't mean throttle you like this.
Right. This is your friend? This guy, he won this case.
I love this. He went to small claims court. Not, you know, he didn't make a federal case out of it. He went to small claims court where you don't need a lawyer, right?
In fact, you can't have a lawyer.
He was smart. He called the Associated Press before his day in court and said, you might want to be in the courtroom that day. The AP showed up. So did somebody from AT&T, which is unusual because a lot of times
the corporation just says, screw it.
But AT&T takes this fairly seriously. Matt said, I had a 30-inch tall stack of documents, including bills and everything, showing what had happened. He said, I was throttled. I've been watching Netflix. I used 1.5 gigabytes, according to AT&T's own data calculator. The judge said, First of all, Matt told me this on the radio on Saturday. He said, first the judge said, in this country, the rules get set in small claims court. They get set at the most local level. This is where true justice happens.
In fact, small claims court's a great thing that a lot of people don't take advantage
of. This is where real justice happens. And in this case, it was unfair for AT&T to sell you an unlimited data plan and then, buried in the contract, say we have the right to reduce data speeds if you use too much of this unlimited data. He awarded Matt $850. He said, Matt, how much do you want? And Matt said, well, I don't know. And the judge said, well, how much does it cost per gigabyte? Matt said $100. The AT&T guy said $50. So the judge said, well, we'll split in the middle. Let's say 85, which is in the middle, but that's fine. And he gave him 10 gigabytes worth or $850.
Yeah, we're spoiled.
AT&T says we are appealing this.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will, because data throttling is huge. Most people are under data throttling plans. People on the East Coast, West Coast.
I got that message three days ago.
Yep. A lot of us do. It's very common. I would say most of the people watching or listening to our shows have received from AT&T that message. Hey, I just got it the other day. You're in the top 5% of users. I wonder if I saved it. I don't think I did. No, I know.
I did. I took a screenshot of it.
What, are you on the phone all day?
Well, Matt was watching Netflix, and I said, well, Matt, why don't you use Wi-Fi? He said, well, I want to watch on my phone. So, but they did. In his defense, he only used a gig and a half.
It's not much.
And they said you have unlimited service.
Seems reasonable.
Yep. Switch to Verizon.
It's not going to help.
They'll do the same thing. You know, in a related case, our good friend Dane Jasper, who runs SonicNet here, at one point offered to some professors who were doing a study on how do you fight congestion. And he said, well, I'll give you some anonymized customer data so you can see. And their contention and his contention as well is that, in fact, throttling and caps aren't how you fight congestion. Most of the time, the people who get throttled or capped are not the data hogs. That's not the problem. They're just people who use it during peak hours. And in about 80% of the cases, these people are not the ones you really want to go after. It's ineffective. Dane Jasper then jumps to a conclusion saying, really, all of this throttling and capping is about preserving, you know, AT&T's right to sell you television via U-verse or Comcast's right to sell you television via Xfinity. They don't want you watching Netflix. They don't want you using VoIP solutions because...
Well, they're going to have to do something about it some other way.
They are.
It doesn't work, it's proven not to work. So now the question is, well, why are you doing it?
Well, they you know, when you write a book, they give you an advance, and the whole thing is designed so you will make no money past the advance that you get for the book. You know,
it's a profit deal.
It's the way that they make money. They want you to blow through your limits so that you have to pay them.
Right.
That's it. It's just like a gym. They expect you to
scam.
Go once and never come back.
Yet another scam. The scam point. Show today.
It is a scam show. The whole world is against you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break and come back. I want to talk about Mobile World Congress. There's a whole lot more.
Barcelona.
Are you going to Barcelona?
I was robbed in Barcelona.
So was John. They stole his passport.
It was Madrid.
I was robbed by gypsies. And
I was gypsies.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you like that?
I was too.
And she is
a gypsy.
If you were robbed by a gypsy, would it then be okay to say you were gypped?
I can say I was gypped, but you can't.
Okay.
That's how it works. Just say
it's considered racist, you know, to say that.
That's recent.
Well, yes, it is recent. In the old days, you could say all sorts of things. That's recent.
It is really recent.
And it's bogus.
Let's take a break. We're going to come back with more. John C. Dvorak is here. Channel Dvorak, and now you're writing for a new domain.net, and you're doing the X3 thing.
I do. Actually, the X3 thing goes over there, and it gets posted.
What is the X3 thing?
X3show.mevio.com. It's one of the great shows on the internet.
It's a great show.
And there's also the Generation X3.mevio.com, which is a good show with the millennials versus me.
Is Mevio going to stick around for a while?
I hope so.
Me
okay,
too.
Just a question. Yeah. Who said that? Oh, you. Okay. I thought it was Eileen. I was worried about
it. I like
Maybe. It's the ears, your ears.
My ears. Coming up in just a bit more. So is X3... I went to x3.mevio.com and it gave me something else.
x3show.mevio.com.
Oh,
x3show. We run all of John's shows over there in exchange for
you can embed it on your...
prostitute his name all over Google+.
That's what she does. She prostitutes me.
Yeah.
Is this it? My channel is loading.
Yeah, it should be.
It takes a while to load.
Hacktivist News of the Week.
I think you have there. Oh, where's my pre-roll?
Here it is. I'll show you.
Isn't that it?
Yeah, that's it. That's the show.
Oh, but you wanted an ad first.
I was hoping to get an ad. I get a piece of that.
Wow, what does that sound like?
It often does show an ad for your show.
I don't know what happened.
Look at that. You got a fancy. Where do you do that? In your house?
It's him. It's Andrew Iser and Joe Engo, and it's a short
show. It's the same people constantly.
Do you go into a studio to do that?
Yeah, it's down in the basement of the Meva. We got two studios down there.
Where's that where they do it?
Well, you go to Holland?
No, it's over here in San Francisco.
Oh, that's cool.
You ask these questions knowing the answer.
It's called leading questions.
Yeah, but they're... Okay.
I'm leading. Sir, I say you are leading the witness, sir. Well, this portion of the Twit show brought to you once again by another reluctant advertiser, Citrix, creators of GoToMeeting.
Ed Iacobucci.
Ed Iacobucci. You know, he poked me.
He's not there anymore.
You and I were in a car with Ed Iacobucci, and we totaled a car.
You totaled a car?
No.
Who was driving?
That was the red herring guy.
Was that Tony Perkins?
That was Tony Perkins we totaled
somebody
a car.
Stu Gaines was on the
Stu
car.
Stu Gaines. We totaled a car with Stu Gaines.
We totaled somebody's car.
How did you total a car?
We totaled three cars, apparently.
Well, we were pulling out. We were having a hard time driving that night in Vegas. Sorry.
I was in the back seat. I don't know anything about it. I was looking out the window going, whoa.
Who was driving?
I believe it was Stu Gaines.
No, we don't remember.
We don't remember who was driving, but I was in the backseat with Leo, and we were going, run.
We did run.
We did run.
We did run.
Off.
What do you mean you ran? What kind of a story is this?
We physically ran away from the car. We didn't know what to do. Leo said, what should we do? And I said, we should
run.
I'm from Florida. That's what we do in Florida.
You ever see a gator eat a dog?
I did.
Okay. We'll ask you.
I did see a gator eat a dog.
We'll find out about that in a moment.
I'll tell you about that.
But first, hey. Did you do that? That was sounded full flesh.
No, that was me.
Oh, thank you, Eileen.
She's like, please, cut it.
Is the Academy Awards on yet?
Not yet.
The Oscars.
Soon.
They're not streaming.
What do you think is going to win?
Okay, let's go best to movie. The ad first.
I'll tell you in a second. Best movie. Let's everybody think about that. And while I tell you about GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting from Citrix. Yes, Ed Iacobucci's former company. He's not there anymore. He actually does like NetJets or something like that.
No, that company went out of business.
That's gone too?
And he's now at a company called VirtualWorks, which is designed to help with the consumerization of IT problems.
So the cool thing about Ed is that he was working at IBM and loaned to Microsoft when they started writing NT. And this guy...
OS 2.
Well... So it was like a cross trade. Like Microsoft guys went to do OS 2, and OS 2 guys went to do NT. The idea being that the NT kernel was going to be built into OS 2. And he learned how, like, the deepest guts of Windows, and as a result, created Citrix, which is absolutely got the fundamental desktop sharing. In fact, Microsoft licensed it back for RDP and so forth. GoToMeeting is based on this incredible, powerful desktop sharing, but it takes it the next level. This allows you to do screen sharing, and now with HD Faces, they've also built in video, very high quality video. So suddenly, you could turn the sound off on this guy. Suddenly, you're in a meeting, you're seeing who you're meeting with, even though they're all over the world. You're getting their body language. It's great for sales presentations, so you can see as a client, you know, going for this. And the client sees you, which is great. You got to make that personal connection in sales. Great for team meetings. We started using them for scrums and stand-ups in our Agile. I don't know what that means, but they told me that's what we're doing. It is so beautiful, so clear, so fantastic. You just got to try this. For product reviews and demos, sales presentations, training sessions, those weekly status meetings, GoToMeeting.com. Now, here's the deal. You could try it free for 30 days, unlimited use, as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. Just go to GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code TWIT. So GoToMeeting.com. Click the try it free button. It's right here, actually.
Yeah,
I'll show you.
For 30 days.
30 days. Orange button. Click that. And then all you have to do, you know, their name and address and all that stuff. But then put TWIT in here. Promo code TWIT. And you get 30 days free. And we get credit. And I like that, too. GoToMeeting.com. If you've not tried it, you must. And do, even if you have tried it, try the HD Faces. It's fantastic. Dan, Gina, John, you going to Barcelona?
I was robbed last year.
So. We wish we were going to Barcelona. I think John left for Barcelona.
No, John's not going to Barcelona. He thinks the flight is too long.
I would love to. Go ahead, Jason.
I'm not going. No, I'm just saying I'm not going, but we've got it covered. You know, our CNET crew has it covered really well. Bonnie Cha and crew from CNET are doing a great job over there, providing some great coverage. Roger Chang, Jessica Dolcourt. I'm forgetting somebody else, but we've got a couple other people there too.
It's going to be huge this year. You know, we debated going. It's normally it's a big cell phone conference. We debated going and decided maybe next year, and I think we will go next year because it, you know, not only are all these new cell phones going to be coming out, but Microsoft is there, and they're going to on Wednesday, on February 29th, Leap Day, they're going to release the consumer preview of Windows 8.
At 3 o'clock at 5 in the morning, California time. We'll get to see that.
Thank you
Make
for
sure
that
you wear your blue and yellow Leap Day stuff.
You're going to live blog it, you can't.
What?
Blue and yellow. You got to wear blue and yellow on Leap Day.
You do?
Yeah.
No, he's making that up.
No. You can research
University of Florida colors.
Why would you wear blue and yellow?
Blue and orange, is it?
Blue and orange?
No, no, that's the Florida colors.
Because John watched 30 Rock this week.
Oh, 30 Rock, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I missed that part. So, first of all, let's talk about what phones are going to come out. Then I'd love to talk about Windows 8 and Windows on ARM, because both of those stories are going to be.
And Adobe's announcing Photoshop at midnight. It's if they haven't done it
They're
already.
Doing a new Photoshop at the MWC, too?
Photoshop Mobile and 9
right,
to 5
right.
Google accidentally
Why
posted
all of a sudden,
the story and blew their embargo.
Photoshop.
Why all of a sudden companies announcing?
The embargo up on that? Oh,
yeah, they blew
sweet.
The embargo.
Who did?
9 to 5, I believe it's 9 to 5 Google or 9 to 5 Mac. Somebody
9 to 5 Mac.
Up. Is it 9 to 5 Mac? And it was very funny because they ran the story. Here are all the details about Photoshop Mobile for the iPad. And then they put a big thing on top of it saying, whoops, sorry.
Oh, wait a minute. You're saying it's for the iPad?
I believe it is for iOS.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. I mean, the desktop version of Photoshop is one of the most convoluted applications, like in terms of downloading it and the crap it leaves on your computer. And on the iPad, it's so I've been told, it's just going to work.
Yeah, I'll bet it's going to be
no, it's
weak.
Exciting as hell.
With that processor, it's not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah. Well, remember, there's a new iPad coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Two of them.
Yeah.
The rumors
right.
too.
Now,
I don't know. Putting these like prosumer or professional tools in the hands of everyone who has an iPad, it's incredibly exciting. You know, the amount of people who are talented designers who haven't had access to things like this and now on very like inexpensive devices can do things like Photoshop, that's very exciting.
It does lend credence to the idea that we are in a post-PC world and that you will not need a PC. Avid's released a very nice video editor for the iPad. I like it a lot. It's pretty competitive for even not only with iMovie, but with really desktop apps. Microsoft, even though they denied it, I think it's agreed, is going to be doing Office on the iPad very soon. Microsoft issued a non-denial denial. Of the original story.
A non-denial denial?
Yeah. Mary Jo Foley writes about it quite nicely. We talked about it on Windows Weekly this week.
I love that.
So, in fact, let me look up the full story so I can give you the details of all of this. Microsoft Office for the iPad. Yeah. The original leak came from The Daily. And they had pictures. And The Daily said they were briefed by a Microsoft guy. Peter Ha of The Daily, who's trustworthy, said, "We didn't fabricate the images. A working version of the app was demoed to us by someone at Microsoft. Microsoft, though, were very clever in their denial. They said, the picture is not of a real Microsoft software product, which would imply maybe it's a fake picture. But in fact, Mary Jo says, after working with Microsoft for years, I know what they're really saying is that's not what it's going to look like.
When you cover Microsoft,
that's the beta version.
That's it. Whenever you cover Microsoft, and any reporter who's ever covered them knows, you have to ask them the exact precise question or they will say no. So, I mean, you have to say, are you coming out with this version of this product that looks like this and be very detailed and only then
exactly,
say
because
yes.
their
that's
denial,
how Microsoft
they'll
is.
Go around. Yeah, exactly.
Like all the president's men.
So it's pretty clear. Mary Jo believes, and I think this is true, that The Daily is right. There will be an Office 15 for the iPad, very similar to the one for Windows on ARM. Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote. They will be Metro, which will be very interesting. Remember, Apple has to still approve this. But I think Apple would be – it's in Apple's interest to get Office
Microsoft
on that.
Microsoft bailed Apple.
Yeah. Apple
is Microsoft.
In fact, I think Apple's probably going, hey, this is pretty cool. We've got Avid. We've got Photoshop. We've got Office. This iPad, this little toy, this little content consumption device is turning out to be a pretty good computer.
It's still a content consumption device.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the excitement that I'm kind of getting to, that you know, if you think 3, 5, 10 years ago, you had to have a device that was so expensive and so convoluted that it excluded most creative people from that marketplace. Now, on a $500 or in 2, 3 years, a $300 device, you can put these incredibly powerful tools into everyone's hands. That's exciting. Post-PC means more people can do computing.
It's exciting and scary. It's like, you know,
I don't think creative people have been locked out of doing computing. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I do, John. I don't think all creative people have been locked out of computing, but middle class people and lower income people, I mean, we can't simply talk to the people who can afford to buy into this. Well, and there are a lot of people, particularly if you think about Africa, if you think about India, the developing markets, there's a ton of creative people who've never seen these devices. Now we have revolutions being held on SMS. These devices are not just about the North American market. It's about the world, and it's about putting powerful devices into the hands of creative and smart people.
We need some music behind him.
I was just going to say that was so inspiring. I want to buy it right now.
Yeah. Where's the flag? Put some flags up.
No, but I'd go a step further. The touch interface also makes it more accessible.
If you can solve
the issues of how do we wrap complexity enough so that we can make it touchable. But you watch a kid use an iPad; it's so intuitive. They're immediately doing stuff with the iPad very comfortably, very easily. So I agree with you. I think that touch is also very, not just the price, but also the interface is very important.
More
if you can solve those
problems.
More accessible,
but less powerful for power users, right? Don't forget, it is less powerful for power users, and you know, and they're not going to get away from the tools they have now, even though they're more complicated and you know more sophisticated. But it is more accessible to a lot more people, and there's a lot of value in that.
And remember that, as Jobs said, not everybody needs a truck. So actually, this is a big question for professionals. And, you know, our editors, people next door doing audio and video editing, people doing high-end music production, they're all using Macs. And they're all asking the question, is Apple going to continue to make tower computers, Mac Pros with expandability features that we need for high-end work? Because it's very clear that Apple sees the real power of this platform, the iOS platform.
I worked with my producer when I was on the first week of the campaign through New Hampshire and Iowa. I mean, he makes movies. We were thrown together and didn't know each other, but he makes movies, and he said his entire industry is moving over to the PC, which just blew my mind. And for that exact reason, they're concerned that Apple is, with Final Cut 10 or Final Cut X, that he just said, no, we're moving to PC. It's so weird.
It's weird. Did you guys see that Google lighting video? You probably covered it.
Yeah, horrible Google lighting video.
Microsoft attacking them.
So this is Microsoft saying that the cloud, the Google cloud, the Google Docs are never going to go anywhere. And they did it somehow by parodying a show that was taken off the air 23 years ago.
Moonlighting. Moonlighting. But they do
Google lighting. Kind of a bad old reference.
Have you seen the video?
Yeah.
It's not a new demo.
Horrible video. I'll show a little bit of that. But let's finish the conversation before we...
Yeah, it's relevant.
Completely
to this.
Shift.
Yeah.
Well, how is it relevant?
I do want to remind people that Jason tends to sound like Max Kellerman when he gets worked up. I just want to point that out.
Who's Max Kellerman?
Yeah. When he gets excited, he gets
sports reporter.
Oh, right. Exactly like Max Kellerman.
It's relevant because you were talking about Office coming on to the iPad and all the things that Microsoft is doing, and Microsoft in this video is attacking Google for doing a lot of the stuff that Microsoft does, so which is releasing.
Here's the video.
There it is.
He's got a Google tie on. See a little white suit
behind a plant.
Microsoft makes these videos. They're just bizarre.
Yep. I wonder what they pay.
Oh, I'm sure they spend a lot of money, but I'm not sure who the audience is for this. First of all, moonlighting.
It's mostly for Google. Yeah, the moonlighting reference is pretty tired.
It's this guy trying to talk.
That's supposed to be Bruce Willis with hair. And this is supposed to be Cybill Shepherd, apparently.
Yep.
He's trying
and
to
they're
talk
terrible actors.
Using Google Docs.
They're probably in-house, I'm guessing.
You think it's for sales?
Yeah, sales guys love this stuff. And I'd like you...
And it shows the age of the sales guy making this.
The best part is
He's real slick.
Best part is a little later on.
60.
When you're going to change your software while we're so he's trying to sell her Google Docs, right?
He's trying to, and
she's skeptical.
She's saying, "What? Why would I use an open system like that?" And he's like, "Oh, don't worry." Who knows what the future holds for Google? You've seen the video.
He says, who knows what the future is for Google Apps? And then some guy on a conveyor belt with a fog machine, because I don't think his legs were moving.
Dudes who thought they were cool in 1987.
I like the sweater over his shoulders.
I like his tie.
This is
This is historically bad. I mean, this
is. It is. Yeah, I can't.
If you hear what she's saying, where she's look trying to give the Microsoft argument back.
Doesn't it make Microsoft just look like the stupidest down market company?
Well, if it was
history,
really funny, it wouldn't. It would work.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not. I mean, this is one of those, it takes one to know one kind of things. Like,
to summarize.
Microsoft looks at Google, right? And that's why Microsoft thinks Google is its biggest competitor, and why they sort of totally took their eye off Apple, right? Is because they look at Microsoft looks at Google and they see all the stuff Google's doing, and they're like, they're doing all the same stuff that we used to do, and they're doing it better than we did, and they're going to burn us. Meanwhile, you know, what they should have been looking at was, you know, Apple sort of undercutting the whole, you know, just eating the whole bottom out of the PC market with the iPad. Mm-hmm. And that's what's, you know, really hurt them.
You know, John, I don't think this is for the sales team because at the end of it, you get a link to whyMicrosoftProductivity.com.
Oh, no, it's not
and,
sales
and a terrible site, which I don't know what the hell
well,
font
it could be
that
for
is.
It's for somebody other than us.
Yeah, if
it's made to validate business.
This is a
guys.
Crazy logo.
Yes,
this is my why Microsoft logo.
I know.
Some
it,
horrible.
It looks
font
like somebody made this
kerned
up.
Right.
I know.
You know the people they were aiming that commercial.
That's
at
not
are,
even are, kerned right.
It's not.
The kerning
the
is
W
poor.
And the H do not kern out.
But there have been a lot of funny videos this week.
It's a company worth billions and billions of dollars, and they can't kern a logo? Give me a break.
That commercial is aimed at 50-year-old IT managers who are right now looking at signing big contracts and getting off of office and signing over to apps. And believe me, every single one I talk to right now is looking at it. I mean, they're at least considering it. I mean, every single one, because it would save them, you know, they would spend a tenth of the amount on Google Apps that they spend, you know, for their Microsoft licensing on Office. So, and that's the only thing Google markets it on, really, is price. That's their main thing, ROI.
Sorry to interrupt, man. I am so cool with that exact person watching this and buying into this. And the more they spend money on these crap products and buy into it, the faster they go out of business and the better for me and everyone else. I mean, please continue to make and watch these videos.
We enjoy them.
You are suffering from wishful thinking.
We enjoy them. So can I just get back briefly to Mobile World Congress?
No.
Yes.
2-1 Okay.
Please.
Well, so
just beg you. I just beg you.
Windows 8 is being
You're
announced.
Not going. Or are you going?
No, I'm not going. Will there be any big phone announcements? Anybody? There's the HTC One. Yes. We're getting ready for that. Yeah.
That was significant. Sorry. Go ahead, Leo.
So HTC One is a 4.3-inch screen. It has the S, X, and the V.
Are you still using that big clunker?
I love it. I'm sorry. 4.7-inch screen. So this is HTC's response to the Galaxy Note, which is a 5.3-inch screen.
Is that their Windows Mango phone?
No. This is Android.
This is their Android.
Yeah.
Because they've got a great...
Well, you threw me on that. I'm looking. It's Android.
They do have a Mango phone.
It's
but
Android.
This is Ice Cream Sandwich. It's 4.0.
Okay. Is this Ice Cream Sundae or Jell-O or what is the next
ice
one?
Ice Cream Sandwich. Well, Jelly Bean is the next one. This is 4.0, but Sense on top of it, which is the first time we've seen anybody's skin 4.0.
Skinned.
It's LTE for AT&T.
It's LTE.
The ice cream's been left out too long.
I think this is attractive because of the screen size, which is a little smaller than the Galaxy Note, but it's bigger than anything else on the market.
The other interesting thing is that they partnered with Dropbox, so all of these phones are going to come with 25 gigs of... you get 25 gigs Dropbox.
That explains why box.net/com... announced 3 days ago that if you have an Android phone and you sign up for you'll get 50 gigs free. It sounded like there was something coming, so that's what it was. They're trying to get people to sign up before Dropbox made this deal. What now? Eileen hosts are all about Android, so she should really be.
She's the
place.
Android. Why don't you send her? She loves going to Spain.
I know.
Yeah,
you and she were caught eating churros in Madrid, I believe.
Churros, indeed.
He said there were no churros in Madrid, but you proved him wrong. There were churros in Madrid.
And they had this weird chocolate that's like...
Chocolate churros.
It's like mud.
Mm.
Really? Yeah, the chocolate, hot chocolate.
What else, Eileen, are we expecting?
Or Jason has something... You
I was going to say this one. There is one reason why this HTC phone is significant, and that's it. It really is an answer as much to their HTC Titan 2, which they announced it, which was their big thing that they announced at CES.
And that's a Windows phone, of course.
It's a Windows phone, right? So at CES, their big announcement was a Windows phone, and there were a lot of questions. Is HTC sort of backing off of Android, right? Because they have gotten crushed by Apple in the courts, and they don't have the deep pockets that Samsung does.
And by Samsung in the marketplace.
Yeah. That's right. So they got crushed by Apple, and that sort of made them kind of reticent, and they've gotten crushed by Motorola at the end of last year. They got crushed by Motorola and Samsung in the market, and they looked like a company that was backing away maybe from Android because Microsoft was giving them apparently some better patent protection with Windows Mobile or Windows Phone than they were getting from Google with Android, right? Mm-hmm. So now this is looking like, okay, they're sort of back in the game. Maybe Google buying Motorola in a sense and them having access to more patent protection is sort of letting HTC step forward. And really, because this looks like the kind of phones we're used to seeing from HTC, right? They had been one of the boldest innovators and the leading device maker.
I love my note, but this makes me want it. First of all, it's quad core Tegra 3. It is 1280 by 720 on a 4:7 screen, which is, I think, for most people, that's a bigger screen than they're used to, but not too big for them. It's just a half inch smaller than the Galaxy Note. This is a spectacular.
It's really thin. It also important to note that there's not a removable battery, from what I understand. So all these phone manufacturers are going towards that.
I like the removable battery in my Galaxy Note. I have 5 batteries now, and I keep them all charged because every hour on the hour I put the new battery.
It's like privacy.
Interestingly enough, the Titan 2, you know, the big Windows mobile phone, that thing had a 16 megapixel camera in it, you know, which is insane for a phone. This one does only have an 8. So they haven't put it, but it has the 4.7 inch screen like the Titan 2. So, but they haven't put everything in that they did with the Titan 2. But obviously, this is a pretty sweet device.
It's very desirable phone. Yeah. It's too bad it's AT&T. They're getting all the good phones now. I don't understand.
They are. It's true. Isn't it T-Mobile? It's T-Mobile.
There's a T-Mobile one as well, but that's not the very nice X. That's the S.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's the S.
Alas.
Yeah. How many phones do people need?
Well, they only need one, but they need the right one. And this is the problem. I feel bad for consumers who every 3 months there's a phone. This new one is like, I want that one.
Look at the size of this thing you're carrying.
Oh, I love it, though. Don't you love this?
That's a note?
Everybody
the
knows
note.
That.
This is, and see, I put a nice leather case so it looks like I'm a professional.
Let's see.
Let me unlock it for you so you can...
You're going to unlock your phone?
I have to unlock it because otherwise John will try to crack it and he'll do it 10 times and then it will erase everything.
You don't care about your privacy. Like, just hand it over and see here, John.
John, last time I gave you the same phone, you put two things on my to-do list. All of a sudden, I'm calling the mayor. I don't know why. T-Mobile wants the FCC to block Verizon's spectrum deals with the cable industry. T-Mobile wouldn't even exist right now, actually, if the FCC allowed that merger.
And Eileen mentioned Dropbox. You know, Windows 8 is building in support
SkyDrive.
For SkyDrive.
SkyDrive, 25 gigs.
25 gigs.
Yeah,
I've got the
Windows on ARM. Do we have anything to say about that? We'll see it on Wednesday, the consumer preview. Microsoft clearly trying to get into this tablet race. Too little, too late? Or do they have is Windows 8 compelling?
No chance.
No chance from Dvorak. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I want to be more excited than I am.
Jason Heiner, you think maybe Windows 8 on ARM?
I know a lot of business people that are waiting to make their tablet, their final strategy, you know, tablet strategy until they see what Microsoft comes up with. So I'm not sure if they will get it right. Right. History says they've not done a lot of smart things lately. But I do know that the opportunity is there. If they do get it right, there are a lot of people, especially businesses, that are waiting to see what they do before they sort of go haul hog on iPad. If they don't get it right, though, then they're toast.
Is it,
Jason? Do you mean buyers, like big toast? Corporate buyers?
Sorry, yeah, I mean buyers in the corporate market.
IT,
yes.
IT,
right. IT,
yeah,
IT
guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, I imagine there's some thinking that we should also wait and see what the iPad 3 holds. Yes. Or no?
Yeah. I mean, I had lunch with somebody from Intel who said, you know, we're not that scared that the tablet's going to take over the PC. I'm like, you're not?
That's why they're desperately trying to create a strategy to get Intel chips into mobile devices. We're not worried, but just in case.
They've gone crazy.
Just in case.
They're always paranoid in Silicon Valley anyway.
But look at the numbers. This year, 2011 was the first year that mobile devices outsold PCs, right?
Right.
This is going to accelerate
in dollar amount.
Absolutely, we are the post PC era.
Units, not in dollar amount.
Well, no, because they're cheaper than PCs.
So are phones. You say phones have taken over the world.
Well, they have.
I'm just saying,
when you guys don't stop using a desktop computer, then you can out listen.
Well, that's it. I mean, because people still want their big screen. And
you'd be surprised how many people come here with iPads now and keyboards. I think it's nutty. But
no, here's
I think
the
iPad keyboard thing is lame.
So do I.
What's
here's
that?
The future, though, you're going to take the device, right? You're going to set it down wireless USB or whatever this is, and you're going to connect to your big screen.
That's
same thing with tablet. You're going to connect to the big screen. You connect to a laptop.
Yeah,
a keyboard, a mouse.
Canonical thinks that. You saw that they've released Ubuntu for Android?
I did.
And the whole idea is that you put Ubuntu on your Android phone and then connect it to a big screen TV and suddenly a big screen monitor, and suddenly you've got a phone that is a computer and a phone. Ubuntu.com/devices/Android if you want to see it. I don't know if this is just kind of nutty, but they do make a good point, which is that you now have in your pocket with a dual or even quad-core phone a whole lot of power that could really be a desktop computer. So maybe, John, I am carrying the desktop computer minus keyboard and screen, and I just have to add the...
You talk a big game.
Well, this is what the Intel
Look at the gear you got back there. You got like $100,000 worth of computing equipment.
That's because I'm
place.
An old fart, and I haven't yet figured out...
You're just a standard
user. How to do all this with an iPad.
That's going to be the computer of the masses, though, is you're going to take your phone or your tablet, and when you need to sit down and do work, you're going to set it down, and you're going to sit just the way we do at a desktop right now, and you know, work with your software, all your accounts, all your information's right there, you know?
That's the future.
One more, and then we're going to take a break. This is from Mobile World Congress. The Galaxy Beam, it is a Galaxy phone with a Pico projector in it. Never bring that PowerPoint projector with you anymore. In fact, you don't need a big screen either, just project it on the wall.
Sure. And it must have, like, what, 40 lumens?
Three?
I don't know. With Windows 8, I mean, you're talking about 25 petabytes of storage for your data. I'm interested in the SkyDrive stuff.
25 petabytes? No, gigabytes.
No.
They're petabytes. Not giving you 25 petabytes.
I'd like that. That'd be cool.
According
to... Use 25. Just load it up with everything.
25 petabytes?
SkyDrive stores 10 petabytes of user data. Hotmail will store...
Well, that's like total, but that's not
all
you personally.
Everybody.
No, that's for your account.
That's a lot.
No, it's not for your account.
Over the lifetime of your account.
No way.
10 petabytes?
For money.
Do you know how much a petabyte is?
Well, yeah.
Okay,
it's a lot.
I have no idea.
It's 1,000 terabytes.
1,000 terabytes would be a petabyte. That's why I said storage is cheap, Leo.
That's
cheap to Microsoft.
I don't know where you got that figure.
It came from LiveSide.net, which is a great website about Microsoft stuff. But I don't know. Vista sucked. Windows 7 is actually really good. We'll have to see about Windows 8.
I'll tell you, if somebody gives me 10 petabytes, I'll take it.
10? Yeah, well, you could actually use it.
I might be able to use it. Let's talk a little bit about Audible.com. We are blessed. We are blessed with a great panel today, including the fabulous Dan Patterson. Dan, where can we follow your new shows, your podcast network, all of that? What's the website?
Well, there will be more information at copoint.com.
It's brand
Although
new.
We are,
so you have
Yeah, well, I mean, it's about 6 months old, but I mean, I'm sure you can hear in this room, we're still waiting for our acoustical foam to come in. So we're not going to give you anything publicly until we zero in on the sound, but copoint.com.
C-O-P-O-I-N-T?
K-O. It comes from the game of Go. The oldest game in the world. If you a ko fight is a balance back and forth.
Ko from the Japanese word for mouth.
Mouth.
Or that, yes.
No, but that's why they use that in Go, because it's a mouse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Go is one of the few games that a computer cannot play well.
That's right. Chess is derived from Go.
Chess is all over. You know, computers beat us. But Go is so difficult that a computer cannot be made to beat the best or even the somewhat good Go players. CoPoint.
Which is why we called the company CoPoint.
I like it.
You guys did.
So do you have a date that you plan to have this happen?
Yeah, I think the first show we're going to do is e-commerce. We're going after like very like small slivers of audiences. We don't want, you know, gawker type numbers. We want to own markets, yeah. Right? So the first is, much like you, narrow casting is right. Far more important. I mean, having people care about the content that humans make is more important than getting tons of clicks.
I got a term for that, Dan, and I got it from a New York Times article about artisanal foods, like people making beef jerky in Brooklyn. We are artisanal media. We're handmade media.
Interesting.
So perfect. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good word for that.
We craft it for a specialty audience that
this
is
never
discerning.
Never ends.
Yeah.
The bull crap.
Welcome to the Artisanal Media Hour. This show brought to you by Audible.com. Sure. Audible. We love Audible. Everybody loves Audible.
Love Audible.
I'm going on a plane flight as soon as this show's over to Seattle. 2 hours. I can't wait. Because I will have 2 hours of Game of Thrones. No, the second one, The Clash of Kings. I'm trying to finish it before HBO puts out the second series of the Game of Thrones miniseries. And it's so great. You put the headphones on, you lean back, and you enter a new world. And that's why audiobooks, I think, are the future in some ways of reading. In fact, when a new book comes out, I look on audible.com first because that's what I want to listen to it if I can.
It's really the best service.
Isn't it great? If you go there right now, audible.com, browse around, there's 100,000 titles. And we've got a 30-day free trial. You can get it right now if you go to audible.com/twit2, and you'll get two free audiobooks. You're signing up for the Platinum Plan. That's 2 credits a month. Most books are a single credit, including big, long books. Did you see they just released Stephen King's The Stand? 47 hours and 56 minutes.
47 hours?
Oh, it's such a great book, too. I downloaded it. It's on my
iPad. Who is the poor guy who had to read that
book? Want to hear Grover Gardner?
Poor Grover.
Here we go. Let's play a little bit.
Sat on number 93, just north of Arnett.
Oh, this guy's great.
Four Street Berg, about 110 miles from Houston.
What they have, I just listened to 11-22-63.
What do you get paid by the hour for?
I know exactly how much.
Yeah, I know you would. What is it?
Because they asked me if I wanted to do James D. Watson's book, and I just don't have time. $5,000.
$5,000 for a book?
Yeah.
What about this book?
Well, $5,000 for an 8 or 9 hour book, I think. So this would be, you know,
about 20 grand.
You're going to
read it anyway.
You know what? These guys are, for the most part, Broadway actors who have some, you know, and a couple extra hours a day to go in and read. That they have the studios there in Newark, and they just go and they read, and it supplements their income. But they are performers, and it's wonderful. Hmm. Listen to Craig Wasson in 11-22-63. He does such a great job of all the accents. He's got the main accent, the Texas. Oh, it's just great. Anyway, Audible. So here's the deal. Here's a tough challenge. You got 2 credits to figure out how you're going to use those 2 credits. Go to audible.com. I can tell you there's just stuff in every category. Bestsellers, nonfiction, history. What happened here? Where'd it go?
Jobs book up there.
Jobs book is here. Yeah. Your book, I Was, is there.
I wasn't even going to mention
I Was. There's Baratunde's How to Be Black. He reads it, which is awesome.
I've got an Audible recommendation.
Yes, please.
You know, they have more than just books there, right? They have this great series called The Modern Scholar, which is professors basically just
I didn't know that.
Doing their books, you know? So I've got this one here. It's hard to see there. Anyway, it's called Stranger Than Fiction, The Art of Literary Journalism by Professor William McKean from the University of Florida. It sounds a little more highfalutin than what it is. It's basically a history of modern journalism from about, late or early 1800s forward. But he tells it in such a great way. I mean, the guy's a great storyteller. He talks about Mark Twain. He talks about, the idea of sort of the Wall Street Journal versus sort of the rumor mags, which is what essentially the early newspapers of the early 20th century were. And it's so parallel to what's happening today, right? You see the story of what's happening today and the way we're doing journalism, and then the way there's sort of rumor sites, right, versus more traditional media sites. And it really is a similar story being told over and over again. But there's a lot on Modern Scholar. If you just look up there, there's awesome stuff.
No kidding.
What is it called again, Jason?
Jason, thank you so much, because there are literally hundreds of these. 131 modern scholars, and these are just yeah. lectures. Here's grammar and rhetoric, Anglo-Saxon world, 6 months to change the world at Paris Peace Conference of 1919, a history of ancient Rome, astronomy, philosophy, the history of Venice. That's well, really – so these are college lectures, basically.
Essentially, but they really they, – at least the ones I've gotten, they pick the really good professors. Wow. I mean, they pick the guys you would want to and ladies that you'd want to listen to. And all the ones that I've had, it's the professors themselves giving the lectures.
That's neat.
And they do a great job.
And in this case, there's an accompanying reference guide, so you've got some this is
that's a great thank recommendation.
Thank you. I didn't
thank
even
you.
Know about yeah. it. Yeah.
Sure.
So wow. I want you to go – see, there's the PDF of this thing. Great. That's cool. So you get additional materials. –
Is our book on there, Leah?
This is from Rutgers. Your book is on
not
there. I was.
Book. The book you
no,
and I
wrote. No, nobody ever would read that book. That's a silly book.
I it's a silly anybody... book? What was the name of it?
101 Computer Answers, right? Or Questions.
What's the name of our book?
Well, you guys don't even remember the name of the book.
Know. Well, you know why?
101 Computer Answers
you need to know. Right. We wanted to call it How Do I Get the Dog Hair Out of the Disk Drive, but the publisher didn't like that.
That's right. The publisher was publisher totally against
it. So immediately, like literally a week after our book comes out, 101 Computer Answers You Need to Know. Kim Commando comes out with a book, 1001 Computer Answers You Need to Know.
She topped you.
She did.
So wow. What are you going to buy, 100 or 1,000?
1,000.
This is a sad
book that was sold.
Quality.
100 quality, that's right. And it had a cute picture of Gina on the front.
And a cute picture of you. A little cartoon.
We were driving a little car. Anyway, that's not on Audible.
Oh, brother.
But lots of good stuff is. Go to audible.com/twit2 and sign up today. You'll get 2 books absolutely free. Cancel at any time. Those books are yours to keep forever. Audible, we love them. What were we gonna, I had some other things I wanted to talk about. Google to oust Motorola mobility chief. Now that they're taking over Motorola, they're firing the CEO. They've got one of their own in there.
Oh, they
got
to do that.
Microsoft.
Are they firing him or is he leaving?
It says this story from Wired says Google to oust.
Yeah, that's
that sounds like
oust.
Yeah,
I've been trying to figure this out. Pushing actually, out. It's a little unclear whether Sanjay Jha got pushed out or if he decided to leave.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument that he did some good things, right, to get Motorola turned around and really focused. I mean, he was the one who decided, look, we're only going to do Android. We're not going to try to, go in 100 different directions. And that was a pretty smart move for them. It was a winning move. And obviously it's what got them bought by Google. My sense is, I just haven't, gotten any good sources on it yet, is that he was just ready to, move on. And that part of his deal wasn't that he had to stick around for 2 years, like there are in a lot of these things.
What is germane, though, is that somebody from inside Google, Dennis Woodside, will be running Motorola Mobility, and
really?
It does what people are looking very carefully, HTC and others are looking very carefully to see is Google going to give Motorola a real advantage in the Android marketplace, or do we still have a chance to make Android phones that can compete?
I wonder when the purchase happened.
Larry Dignan is ZDNet has a good
Larry's great.
Dignan is ZDNet has a good piece on this, and he really thinks that they're going to be out of the device business, pretty much pretty quickly. The guy, he talks about the fact the guy that they're putting in charge is really an advertising guy, right? That says a lot. It's not a device guy. Sanjay leaving obviously says a little bit of that as well. I think that'd be sad. I think Motorola becomes the Nexus. It becomes a boutique brand. Motorola becomes the Nexus maker.
Right.
And I think that's more likely, but probably they're going to cut pretty deep.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you'd have a lot of regulatory issues if you suddenly started competing against the other. And it's not in their interest to compete against the other Android manufacturers.
Yeah, true.
What's cool that's going to be announced in Barcelona this week
what?
Is there's a company called Valeo, V-A-L-E-O. It's actually a giant component maker for cars. You guys know all about cars. And they're showing a self-parking app. Now, why would you want something
app?
Like that? An app that parallel parks your car. You get out of your car. And they're working with all these car
You get out of your car and then you run.
I've got a video of it. You can look at it. It's the scariest thing. You see this woman
it's
get out of her car and the car parks. There
Park
you
for you.
It's called Park for
Remote.
You. Because I could not remember the name.
Remember, Ford has this. A lot of cars have this auto park facility.
Well, they're working with Ford,
but this is not even. This is parallel parking, it looks like.
It's parallel parking.
Well, I mean, it looks like not.
Now, really, seriously.
Out.
Are you going to do this? Would anybody do this? Is this nuts?
You only do
you
this if
get you get out of the car, then you use the app? No.
This has got to be built into the car, obviously. Oh, this is not just an app.
Why would you get out of the car, first of all? Don't you want to have a foot on the brake?
The reason they're showing it is because there's no room on either side to get out.
Oh. Right. Oh, look. She's using it like a remote control, so it's not even doing it automatically. She's controlling the car via the app.
If you
there's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
No, there's a lot of lawsuits waiting to happen with these things.
You get them away, they explain how they do it. But you're
they
right,
use radar, ultrasonic, infrared, and vision sensor system. So you're right. The car has to have the capabilities.
Yeah, the car has all the well, they're a component maker for
this is never
going to
fly.
Industry. They're probably going to work with Ford. You should talk to your Ford guy and ask if they're working with Vallejo.
Well,
Ford will do it. No, no. In fact, I was in a Ford Flex.
And smashed up the place.
Well, I did because – and that's why I wouldn't get out of the car. It turns out after you park, you're supposed to put your foot – you know, set the brake. And I didn't. And it was, of course, still idling, so it just kept going.
And that's how you crash the car in Vegas.
It's kind of stupid. I didn't do it.
I'm kidding.
Apple buys Chomp.
Really?
Who cares?
I think this is actually kind of a big story. You remember back this summer when Siri was the big deal? We all talked about search and,
right.
And you know, Apple is... I mean, Siri is really the interface, but Chomp, I think, is going to be the guts.
It's a recommendations engine. It was a third-party app that recommended apps, right?
Yeah.
And Apple...
It's an app search engine.
So what do you think they're going to do with this, Dan?
Well, I think that I really think that Siri is the front end, but they need something that is not just an index, right? It's smart. It will organize things and it will make however we surface things, it will make it more relevant in ways that aren't googly, you know?
That's interesting. It's like curating the app store.
Yeah.
There's half a million apps. You need something, right?
Yep.
That's, you know,
Apple's definitely going to do search, right? I wrote an article in the fall why Apple's about to build, buy, or partner on a search engine. I mean, Siri is definitely the beginning of something big for them.
You bet. Siri is audible search, to use the word audible in a funny way, and then right after that is visual search.
So there's so far 24,763,232,000.
Here we go. So this solves two problems for them, right? The app discovery problem, and the search intelligence. They need some more search brains in their organization now, right? So I think it's a pretty good acquisition.
Do you think now Apple has this? Okay, so we're looking at this countdown.
I think
clock.
It's a fake.
And first of all, yeah, right. It's not really counting. But the second thing is, it says download the 25th billion app, and you could win a $10,000 gift card. Do you think somebody's going to try to download the 25th billion app? Like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Okay. Buy it! What?
It'd be a team of people.
If you could take...
Like they do use in Vegas.
That's right. I was just gonna...
That animation is going up at a certain rate, right?
Right.
And I mean, that's an animation. Okay, we all know. But it's got to be going up at a rate that is...
Yeah. It's reasonable.
Close.
Right.
Reasonable. So some nerd out there is totally going to go, all right, well,
you think this,
we can approach.
So you think actually that this promotion sells apps? Like people are buying more apps so they can be the 25th billionth?
No. It affirms that we have the biggest promotion. Junk.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us. We are bigger, stronger, and like all those Google guys, you think they got a store? We got a store.
The real point of giving somebody $10,000 is so there'll be all those stories afterwards of the 8-year-old kid who bought a fish.
Yeah, Eric will probably buy it.
It'll be your kid.
Exactly. Some kid will do it. Or somebody who's the guy that always buys the lottery tickets.
It's your kid's birthday today. You should give him a call out.
No, it's her husband's birthday.
It's Henry's birthday.
You came up here on Henry's birthday.
Aren't I rotten?
Oh, my God. Did you get him a cake?
Give him a call out. Say happy birthday, Henry.
Happy birthday.
Flickr disables Pinterest pins on copyrighted images. That's an interesting response to Pinterest. Do you use Pinterest, Johnny? You seem like a scrapbooker.
Yeah, don't I? I actually wrote a column last week. You go check it out, PCMag.com. I wrote about Pinterest and what I thought about it.
What do you think?
What do you think?
I think it's really a serious winner.
Really?
Yeah.
I used it.
And I'll tell you why. Here's why. Because it's nonlinear. It has it really uses human pattern recognition to an extreme. It's not this blog style where first in, last in, first out.
No,
whatever.
It's just like a thing.
And it reminds me of these. There's a bunch of websites very similar to this that you've seen that always show the guy with the big nose and some compelling headline. Man's giant nose explodes. And there's a whole bunch of these pictures. You ever seen these websites? Anyway, they're all. And as soon as I think somebody saw that website, we can make a user generated content site better than that. And that's
what this is. It is compelling. You do kind of want to just kind of scroll.
People get addicted to it. I
do too. Yeah,
thought it was great. I don't look at it much.
Every time I go there, I end up spending 20 minutes, and I come away with 2 to 3 like useful or interesting. Things. I've gotten to the point where I've stopped myself from going there sometimes because I always end up spending 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's a time killer. It's the most modern of time killers.
Twitter is to real time. Pinterest is, the Facebook equivalent. There isn't an edge rank system, but Facebook really doesn't care about the real time. They care about the quality and the stream and surfacing what's relevant to you. I think Pinterest is kind of the same thing.
So this isn't chronological? Are they using some sort of algorithm to promote? So this is people I follow. Isn't this just chronological, or is there some sort of algorithm involved?
No, it's chronological.
I think your feet.
It is chronological. And if I go to popular, of course.
Yeah, but it's not linear. You don't have one
it
thing
It isn't
after.
Linear.
It's not
right,
like G plus. This is the G plus killer.
There are already three adult Pinterests out there.
Yeah, I think this is the Google plus killer that people don't think.
This is a Google plus killer?
That's my opinion, yes.
Wow.
The real winner is Sinterest.
Yes, that's the sex one.
Sinterest. Now go to that.
That's the winner.
Okay, don't show my screen.
Don't show
I'm not
screen.
Showing
Show John's reaction to my screen. I don't have an account, so
nothing
I hope
yet.
It's going to load. It should be easy to stash great stuff with one hand. Actually, you can show my screen because they don't actually yet show
me. I
anything.
Need a bit part. I work for scale.
Leo, it's Lent. I thought you were French.
I'm giving up Sinterest.
There's
nothing
going on.
All right, moving on.
Yes.
I think that's it. Anything? Any other big stories? Gina, you have a whole bunch of stuff on a new domain.net, and I don't know if we've hit everything.
Oh, okay.
We mentioned the Google heads-up display glasses. Nah.
The visual search and the heads-up
Would you
displays.
Buy those, the glasses
oh,
you
those
wear?
Glasses.
Not
that's
for consumers.
It's
for
goofy.
Cops.
That's a goofy
it's
story.
For cops
it's terrible.
When they pull you
terrible
over.
Story. You think it's real?
Oh, yeah, it's real.
Oh, I think it's real. I still think it's just ridiculous.
It's just stupid.
But,
yeah.
Have you, it's real
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
If you've seen
who's gonna, you know what it reminds me of? Remember Microsoft did the smartwatches a couple years ago? That's
yes.
what it reminds me of. Right?
The spot watch. They just turned off the spot server on January 1st.
Yeah, these heads up displays are going to be really vertically targeted.
I'm just curious. Do you wear a watch? Do you wear a watch, Jason?
No, not anymore.
Do you wear a watch?
Never.
Do you wear a watch?
No, not today.
Do you wear a watch, Dan?
Only when I'm backcountry. Like
nobody wears watches anymore, right? It's dead. Like watches
you
are
use
dead.
Your phone.
Somebody's going like that. I have a watch on, but that's just because I'm a fashion-forward, Pinteresting kind of guy.
What does that watch say? Is it
a
fake? Is it a watch that says something? Oh, it's a.
It's just a watch. It doesn't. It's not even digital. It doesn't have the date. Nothing. It's just a watch.
It's a dog.
It's not a dog. It's a watch.
What's the WikiLeaks story?
I wonder why nobody wears watches anymore. Is
because
it just
they use their phone
you
and you get really accurate time.
Okay. What's about WikiLeaks? Anything?
WikiLeaks. There's a big WikiLeaks story.
There's always
a
WikiLeaks story.
That's right. I was going to say there's a story every day, guys, from WikiLeaks.
What is the WikiLeaks story, chat room?
Tell us, chat room. What
is it more interested? WikiLeaks to publish security think tank emails.
There it is.
Reuters.com just published this story 5 minutes ago.
That's how fresh this is.
The anti-secret group, secrecy group WikiLeaks. Is that how we define WikiLeaks now? The anti-secrecy group?
The anti-secrecy group.
Who came up with that one?
Yeah.
AP or Reuters said it would begin publishing more than 5 million emails tomorrow from a U.S.-based global security think tank, apparently obtained by hackers.
Right on time for
Strategic Forecasting Incorporated, or STRATFOR. Oh, that is Stratfor is big, actually.
Yeah.
Austin, Texas. They are a subscription-based provider of, quote, geopolitical analysis. So it's a private spy firm, basically.
Wow.
That's what they do.
So news writers for a new domain, get on that story. Right.
That's
now.
Interesting. I don't know what it means.
You probably have two people that work for them.
Yeah, that's true.
Stratfor's computers were hacked into at least twice in December.
Anonymous,
you know,
is hitting them
for a security firm, that's probably not great advertising. All right, we're going to wrap this thing up. I didn't get a chance to ask you, Jason Heiner, what you want to talk about. Jason Heiner, of course, is at techrepublic.com. What's up in your world?
I mean, we're, you know, rocking and rolling. Tech Republic's still doing all of what it does as a, you know, trade publication and community for technology professionals. You know, you can also find me on jasonheiner.com. That's the place where you can find the link on Tech Republic. I do a link to my newsletter that I do every day. I do a daily newsletter that goes out to over 100,000 of my closest friends in the tech industry, I sort of pick my picks for the top stories of the day in tech. So a lot of it's as it relates to business professionals. But, you know, I'm also picking in just stories that are significant. So,
Jason, it looks like you're building a personal brand.
Looks like he's a hipster. Are you a hipster?
What is it, the Argyle sweater?
Sweater and the hat?
I know. So it's funny, if you actually go, I've got these two... these two photos. I had went to this other photo. Yeah, exactly. If you go there and you go to the top thing there, you can see here's my other photo is the one in the suit. I posted that. I changed my photo just because I hadn't updated my photo in a couple of years. I put that up there.
You look like a Turkish terrorist.
Don't go to the airport.
Definitely
stay away. TSA warning. Warning.
Do not post that.
It was so weird. I got so much backlash against that photo. So I was like,
you'd be fit right in Portland. Move there.
He'd fit right into Barcelona.
Portlandia.
Portlandia.
Oh, no, pulling up all the pictures. Yeah, you can click off of the pictures now. That's okay.
I like that one. Look at that one.
I like it. All you need is a Labrador Retriever and you're set, dude.
A Czech Republic.
I know. It's like, that looks like a Gap ad or something, right?
It's a little bit.
Hey, why'd you get the double box? You didn't have this on before.
Did you like that?
I've been using the double box. You haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, I haven't seen the double box. Fancy, the double box, you look like you're Fox News or something.
So all week long, we are going to be reporting. We will not be in Barcelona, but believe me, we have spies there. We will be paying attention to Mobile World Congress, all about Android in particular, with Jason Howell and Eileen Rivera and Ron Richards. When are you going to do your MWC special?
Well, we're going to start tomorrow, actually. Right. Tomorrow night, we'll have plenty
5
of coverage.
Pacific. Mm-hmm. Make sure you tune in for all about Android. And, of course, TNT at a new time. We've moved it to 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, because I was always late. So we just figured, well, the heck with it. It's at 3 p.m. anyway, so we might as well just do it then.
It's a better time.
It's a better time. 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv all week long for the news. We thank you for joining us. Thank you especially to Dan Patterson. It's great to have you. John C. Dvorak.
Thank you.
Dvorak. To Gina, I almost said Trapani, to Gina Smith from anewdomain.net.
And Tech Republic.
And Tech Republic now. And, of course,
yes,
Jason Heiner.
ChannelDvorak.com. Don't forget that.
Yeah, didn't I say that?
I don't know.
I think I did. ChannelDvorak.
And John from anewdomain.net.
Yeah, and he also writes for Gina. We're all interlinked here.
Doing video.
We're all interlinked.
We're all working for each other. There's only a few journalists left.
Yeah.
And you can come join us.
The chat room's already asking, how long before TNT starts at 3:30?
Okay. It's funny.
As I slowly push them down the clock. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next week. Another twit is in the can. God bless America.
This is amazing.
Nailed it.
Thank you, sir. I was supposed to remind you about a letter that Archie had.
I was going to read that. Shoot.
During the show or just
in
between shows?
I wanted to read that. I forgot.
Well, we could insert it if you want.
It's a really great. Well, let me just read it now and you can decide. Yeah. I'll let you be the judge.
Okay.
This was an email that we got. I thought it was, actually, John, you might be interested in this. Kind of interesting.
All right, well, I'll turn all the mics on.
Is his name Archie? Or no, I got it from Eva. Eva sent it to me.
Right.
That's right. Hello from Khartoum.
Khartoum.
Hi there, writes Archie. I've been meaning to get in touch with the Twit Cottage for years, finally decided to do it. You don't have to read my words, but I'm happy to be writing them. I am Aki. He says Aki or Achi, but his full name is Archibald. I've been listening to Twit since the early days, and it's been a constant source of information, smiles, and company during the years. Although I'm from England, I work internationally. You tell me what this guy does. I find myself in conflict zones from Beirut to Jaffna, Monrovia to Gulu. I didn't really expect it. Bizarrely, I was an archaeologist for years. It's a long story. So anyway, I'm in some places that aren't the most genial in the world, but through it all, I've somehow managed to find an internet connection in a world strewn with the mess that people create, and have downloaded as many TwitNet casts as I can get my ears on. I've driven through tsunami destruction, barely awake after months of relief work, listening to early twits on an old HP laptop the size of a paving slab, and wondering how these war-ravaged people became part of a natural disaster. I've fallen asleep to John C.'s ranting, the only way to overpower the noise of the army bombing the LTTE in Sri Lanka as the rattle of AKs competed with tropical crickets. Wow! I was in Liberia sneaking downloads from the work VSAT system and listening with the curtains closed and the outside world firmly outside so I could drift off to Petaluma and join friends I've never met talking about tech I never saw but loved anyway. I was in Uganda just after the war rebuilding that beautiful country and walking along the red-brown roads made vibrant with the light of Gulu City sunset, watching women carry water-filled jerry cans on their heads and hearing the latest about Android on my iPod, smiling at the dichotomy of the modern world. I found my true love there, too. She'll be my wife in April. I now find myself in Khartoum, Sudan, trying as always. He must be, you know, I think he's in a, must work for a relief organization, right?
No, he's with MI6. He's the IT
guy. Either MI6
or
is it,
Secret Service.
I now find myself in Khartoum, Sudan, trying as always to keep on believing the world will sort itself out and the little I do might give it a helping hand. And I'm still downloading, still listening, still falling asleep, thinking I'll get to visit one day, go see the brick house and say hello to that curmudgeon Dvorak and shake hands with Leo. It'll take me a while, but I'll get there. I can't wait. I wanted to share, to say hello and thank you. It's a strange world, and I feel happier you guys are in it doing what you do because sometimes it feels like you are doing it just for me. When a bad day comes and I want to go home to my friends, family, and more, my love, you fill my head with your chat and keep me sane. I think he's confused about me in April. Take care. Warm regards. Much love. And keep on keeping on. Archie, can you do me a favor? Drink a cold beer for me Sunday during the next twit. It's a dry country here, and I miss a cold one, you know, just once in a while. Nanite. Is that wild?
When he comes here, we'll give him a Lagunitas IPA.
Is that? I think he's a relief worker.
You think he's a relief worker?
Yeah.
I would guess
that. I think he's an IT.
I'd love to meet this guy. I will be in Juba sometime this spring, and I'd love to meet this
Archibald guy. Archibald Kerr.
Cool.
K-E-R-R at yahoo.com. I would send him a note.
You would send him a note for that?
Yeah, and I will send him a note. And you know what? I think we should just put this in at the end. Just like this is something just after the show ends, and I say another tweet. Hey, by the way, here's a note from somebody who sent us an email, and just wild. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
Awesome.
Blew my mind when I read that. I thought, wow, it's people.
There's something now. There's somebody pointed out in the chat room. There's something suspicious about this note because he wants a cold one, but he's British. They only drink warm beer.
No ice in England.
It's a fake.
That's very funny.
All right. Thank you, everybody.